Okay, this is a whole lot different than what I was doing 60 years ago tonight.
Yeah.
And what would that be? Well, you'll just have to stay tuned. Hi, kids. Him and her on the radio.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, this is a whole lot different than what I was doing 60 years ago tonight.
Yeah, it was very different for me, too, because I was bemoaning the fact that school was going to be out soon, and I would be so sad because I hated when school was out for summer.
And this is one of those things, and we did a blog post about it. So those of you who are subscribing to our blog, you already know what we're going to be talking about, and you already know what the recipe is that Johnny's going to be giving out a little later tonight.
Yes.
See, that's one of the perks of subscribing to our blog. But this is a 60th anniversary that I completely forgot about.
But thanks to Facebook, one of the positives that Facebook gives you are those little memories, what you were doing on this day.
And I completely forgot about this, but it was 60 years ago tonight, May 23rd, 1966. My first night on the radio at WJOB in Hammond, Indiana.
Wow.
As a professional, right? It wasn't you stopped by to be a kid on the radio. This was your gig.
It wasn't that I stopped by to promote a record or something. This is what I was going to be doing.
Yeah, yeah. Ron, I second that.
Yeah,
wow.
That is a big wow. I didn't know that's...
And you'd think you'd remember the wows, but honestly, if it weren't
after 59, it's like it's all a blur, right?
Getting the hang of it yet?
He's working on it. Yeah. I'm here for him. You know, I'm propping him up.
I've just been thinking about how many things that are in this studio that just did not exist.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah. You can stay, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff Carlin is our producer du jour.
I really was fretting over the fact that school was going to be out, and in grade school at that. So we had very different lives, and then our paths crossed. And thank goodness you did that gig 60 years ago.
Yeah.
Or we wouldn't be here right now.
And at that point, as I mentioned in the blog, certainly WGN was on my radar, but did I have
Because you listened to the Indy 500 on GN back in the day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Which reminds me, in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to be talking with Dane Neal and get a preview of the Indy 500. Dane is always so happy to stay up late with us the night before the Indy 500 when he has to get up really early in the morning.
Yes, and work for like 15 hours straight.
Yeah.
Right. Ron, do you recall exactly where you were the first day you were on the radio?
Oh, when I was I did college radio. I don't remember exactly the date. I could probably research it and figure out pretty close to it.
But your first professional radio station.
First professional radio station after the Air Force. That would have been in Rapid City, South Dakota, the station owned by Tom Brokaw. Maybe you heard of him.
Hmm.
He's a very famous owner of radio stations in South Dakota.
Did he ever stop by the station?
He did.
Did he really?
Stopped and said hello and joked around, and we had lunch, and very nice.
Huh.
So he's a good guy to work for?
He was from Yankton, South Dakota. He was a co-owner of the station in Rapid City. And, he'd come by once every couple of years, and I was just lucky enough to be there when he stopped by.
Was he still doing any news stuff when he?
He was. Yeah, he was he was the nightly news anchor for NBC at the time.
Wow.
So so I was awestruck. I was like, Mr. Brokaw, call me Tom. I can't. I can't.
Were you the news dude at that time?
I was a disc jockey, but we also read news too. So.
And what kind of music were you playing?
Country music.
Country music. And Steve, you were playing middle of the road.
Yeah, what they called middle of the road at that point.
MOR.
What we had at WJOB in 1966, it was a middle of the road station that had one show at night from 7 to midnight, and that was Jan Gabriel. And he played all the top 40 stuff. The rest of the time, the station would play top 40 stuff if it was like Petula Clark or Frank Sinatra
Mamas
or
and
something
the Papas.
Like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Soft.
Yeah.
Easy for the old folks, right?
Yeah.
I never really understood middle of the road.
Yeah.
Because when I started in radio, that was a thing too, because you had AOR and you had MOR. I had to stumble there because the radio station I was working at was MRO,
right.
Not MOR. Never
mind. It was MRO and AUR.
Yes. Keeper of the Big Plug, Bob, is in the house. First radio station you worked at?
June 6th, 1988. Music for a New Age. It was long before they switched to smooth jazz.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
88.
You're talking like, you know, everything, like, you know, like whale farts and all kinds of weird.
But what was it? I forget, were the call letters NUA?
It was NUA.
It was, okay.
But it was music for a new age.
Because in my mind, that was kind of a weird segue when they went from new age to smooth jazz, because it all kind of blended together anyway.
No more whale farts. Well, when they was.
You know, when Mannheim Steamrollers, you're up-tempo.
Yeah,
music. You're in for some real sleepy times. George Winston.
Look,
oh God, it was
the look on your face is like you're reliving it.
Oh, it was terrible.
And it's now history.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And thanks to me, because I'm the one who took it off the air.
Oh, you did?
Oh yeah, they made.
So if you want to write angry text, 312-981-7200. If you're angry at Bob for.
So you have a 48th anniversary coming up in June.
Yeah.
Right. I did quick math. I'm like, am I right?
Something like that, yeah.
And Jeff, who was not around 60 years ago.
Okay, your first radio station?
My first radio station was WLS.
I was
doing mornings, overnight mornings there, prepping the morning show.
Mm-hmm.
But my first time on the radio was actually with you guys, which I think you may know this story. You were doing Sundays, I believe, at the time.
Yes.
And I won tickets to, I think it was Graham Chapman at Ravinia or something. And it was under one condition, and I was like eight, that I came back the next week and gave my review of the concert.
I remember this.
Oh, good grief.
Wow. This is back when we were over in the Tribune Tower.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember that, too.
So what year was that?
I was eight, so it would have been 91, 2, something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
that's when we were doing the Sunday afternoon show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that that was my first moment on radio.
Yeah, I used to call in radio stations when I was a young child.
Yeah.
You know, Larry Lujack, John Records Landecker,
mm-hmm.
Sure. Bob Surratt, I would call in. You know, there was a contest. I was on the phone, and I was dialing in. Won a couple of times, won some, you know, record albums and such.
Well, when we got married, we actually had people at our wedding that were callers to Steve when he was at WLS,
yeah.
And they became friends over the years, and such good friends that, like, here they are at our wedding.
And we had a lot of people who were friends of ours from the WIND days.
Oh, sure.
That we met there.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm talking about listeners that would call in to you after midnight, and one thing led to another, and you became a part of their life to the extent that, yeah, come on, I'm getting married. Come to our wedding.
Come on down.
Yeah. Well, we have a full show tonight. Coming up, we are going to talk with Dane about the Indy 500.
And we're going to meet Joanna Van Dorf. She is the owner of Deflowered Bakery in Andersonville, as we continue observing
Celiac Awareness Month. Yes.
And Johnny has another recipe she will be unveiling. And if you subscribe to her blog, you already know what it is. And you already
know if you subscribe. But I cannot tell you. Ribs were the thing last week, right? I have received literally dozens of contacts from folks that said, okay, that's it. I'm never making them any other way. I cannot believe that all my life, my crock pot was sitting in the cabinet, and I didn't know I could shove those ribs in that crock pot, and magic would happen.
Yep.
In fact, tonight when I signed under the text line, there were people saying, yep, I did it last Sunday, and I wish I had more tonight. And at Jewel, the Jewels have buy one, get two more for free. two more because I had two in my cart yesterday and I felt a presence behind me and it was the butcher and I turned around and I'm like all the way over in another department.
Okay, now, if that were taken out of context, I felt a presence behind me. It was the butcher.
It was the butcher.
Dun, 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 dun.
And he says, ma'am, ma'am, if you get up to the register with two slabs of ribs, they're going to charge you for two. And I said, yeah, I thought it was buy one, get one. He goes, no, come with me. And I went back to the back of the store. You got to get two more to get the deal.
What a nice guy.
Yeah. Because one slab of ribs was like $21, so the other two at $23 and $25 were free. I thought that was wild. But that was very nice of him to follow me through the store. And he might have been calling.
Following you through the store.
The butcher, yes. With blood on his jacket.
Did he have a cleaver in his hand?
Is that how you knew
he was a butcher?
And he had a white coat on and white shoes, and they were all blood spattered.
That's a good story right there.
I know.
Also, a little later tonight, Petra Crispin joins us.
Yes. Oh, there's a lot to talk
about.
Oh, boy,
there's
stuff
to talk about.
I can't wait till he tells us about the experiment done running four radio stations strictly with AI.
Yep.
On one hand, it's depressing. On another hand, it's absolutely hysterical. You think, oh, it's depressing because, okay, that means our days of real live people are numbered. And then you read what happened with those four radio stations.
Yep.
It's crazy funny. It's not going to happen for a while, but he'll have all the details on it.
Job security.
Yes, that's right. We will take a break. We'll come right back and get this show rolling here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And Johnny has just been handed a document by our producer du jour, Jeff Carlin. And this is what?
This is your sexagennial.
Huh?
Yeah, not your sexagennial, but your sexagennial. It's the formal Latin-derived adjective used to describe something that happens in 60 years. So it is your diamond jubilee, but I kind of like the sexagennial. You don't get to use that every
day.
Jeff?
Wait a minute. I have to do my Barry White. Home baby, I'm sexagennial.
You are! The data here, this is what he's experienced over this period of time?
Yeah, if you were to measure it, these are the amounts.
Alternative
measurements.
If you're just joining us, this is the 60 years ago I started in radio.
So you've experienced 804 full lunar cycles in this period of time.
I've worked for a lot of them.
two orbits of Saturn around the sun. Five orbits of Jupiter. I'm sorry. This just tickles me. 60 orbits of Earth around the sun. Well, of course.
That one's obvious.
Yeah. 97 orbits of Venus around the sun. And Mercury's been real busy. 249 orbits around the sun. All right. The average number of nights you've spent resting, in your case.
Oh, no.
Nada.
No.
Zero.
Zip. Zero. That does not compute.
Yeah, three daytime naps is what that should have said.
Yeah.
21,915 sleeps. Okay, maybe 915 in those 6 years. 630 million breaths? The approximate number of times a person breathes in a 60-year period. Wow. The exact conversions are 21,915 days. And we said this coming to work tonight. It just blows my mind that, and I don't want to be part of Jimmy Kimmel's show, but it's almost June. What happened?
Yeah, this
it's
was
just,
realizing that this is Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
It just jumped on us.
Yeah. Wow. So it means you have 525,960 hours. That just doesn't seem like enough, does it?
No.
Yeah. So I was trying to fall asleep the other night, and I decided to count the number of days I've been alive. And I got to my fourth birthday, and I was asleep.
Oh, so that works?
Yeah, I was thinking, well, why count sheep? Sheep are so cute, and they might start talking to me like in the new movie with Hugh Jackman, and then I thought, well, you know what? I'll just count to how many days I've been alive. And literally, I got to my fourth birthday, and I was like, okay, I was gone.
And that's proof that opposites attract.
Mm-hmm.
When we try to crash for the day, Johnny, when she lays her head on the pillow, it will take less than 15 seconds. She's gone.
Mm-hmm. It's the magic of gummies.
If I'm lucky, 3 hours later, maybe I will start to get sleepy.
And I'm not giving you my gummies, so sorry.
If I am lucky enough, sleepy enough to crash, I'll wake up in an hour and I'll awake for the rest of the night.
Yeah. But you know what? You're watching the house. I feel safe. Because I can sleep because you're awake, sitting at the front door with your rifle.
Okay.
Just kidding, folks. Just kidding. We're going to take a break for news, and coming up, we're going to talk with Dane down at the Indy 500 here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. 500 miles and a dream comes true.
Yep.
The Indianapolis 500.
The 110th running of the Indy 500, and we go to Indianapolis right now and say, howdy, Dane Neal. How are you, Dane?
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Good, good. Do you have your jammies on? You ready to jump in bed as soon as we finish?
No, we're doing some fine-tuning on some of the things. We got some extra stuff happening. Having a little bit of difficulty with the internet here at the Candlewood Suites, the luxurious one.
Oh.
But it's better than was driving around on the way as they shut down streets. For anyone that has never made it here, you really do have to plan ahead. But a lot of tents out there. A lot of people just, I would say, roughing it.
Yeah. Really?
And as we say every year, if you are listening to us right now and you're thinking of going to the Indy 500, leave now.
Leave yesterday.
Yeah. Because 38th Street, Emerson, that's all backed up or about to be backed up very quickly. I have to ask, what is the atmosphere down there? Because unlike a lot of Indy 500 races, boy, you've got the loss of Kyle Busch hanging over that, and that's a big deal.
Well, yes. I mean, it's something I think is just accepted, certainly by the drivers. And I guess it's understood by the fan base. This, of course, wasn't a driving-related, death with Kyle Busch. It was just so out of the blue, only 41. Yeah. And they just released a couple hours ago. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, but it was pneumonia, right? And then it turned into sepsis, and then he died, which sounds like preventable, right? It just seems so tragic.
Yeah, it really does. And I was just saying, as I was reading the story in the studio here, he must have been miserable when he was racing last week. Because with pneumonia, you get all sweaty and you feel weak, and yet he raced. And he was interviewed after that race and had a little bit of a coughing spell, and then things just went downhill after that. It was really sad.
So racing at Dover ended up, people are saying, well, how sick could he have been? He got 17th. He raced. He ended up winning the truck race earlier in that weekend.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I mean, if you're going to look at maybe some sort of a positive to take out of it, is for people to at least be aware of what it is. But super shocking and a great loss for NASCAR, and one of the all time greats, a 2-time Cup Series champion. He'd won more races when you combine all the series than anyone. Well over, I think it may have been like 230.
What?
Some odd races. Yeah.
He set records that I think it's fair to say that probably will never be broken.
Yeah, for sure. Not in a modern era. You look at Richard Petty with some of the things that he did. So what Kyle did is he owned his own team, but then also was racing for Richard Childress as of late. But he would race the truck race, the Craftsman truck race. He would race the Xfinity Series, now O'Reilly, and then, of course, a great Cup Series. So on a weekend, he might race all three. That allowed him. He was good too. Obviously, he was racing and winning, and just piling up the victories.
Yeah. Wow. Who's the big story at Indy this time around?
Well, you look at it. There's always some great storylines, and you got the 33 drivers, and many of those storylines will be with us tomorrow on the pre-race show. It's going to be starting at 9 right here on WGN. But some of the most compelling ones, so Catherine Legg is one of the drivers that I've known for a number of years, interviewed her over the years, and has raced the Indy 500. But then also doing the thing that they call the double. You know, the last couple of years, you guys, of course, we've talked about it. You know, Kyle Larson, you know, NASCAR driver, dirt track driver, had attempted to race it. He's just so talented. One of those guys that can get in anything and have a chance to win. And he attempted it the last 2 years. And then now Catherine Lake is going to be doing it. And she's only the sixth to attempt it, the first woman ever to attempt it. Hmm. And nobody has, well, only one person has ever finished it. That's Tony Stewart, who actually got, I think, sixth in the 500 and third in the Coca-Cola 600 in Charlotte. So had a good chance to even win one of the races. But I do think Catherine Lake has a chance. It's, you know, if she can get through the Indy 500, and she's been racing the last couple of years. She raced the Chicagoland Street Race, mm-hmm. and a number of other NASCAR races over the last couple of years, kind of familiarizing herself with the stock car side, and finished, had a couple top 20, so definitely decent enough. I think she's got a shot.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe all of the other drivers who have attempted this double were planning it for months, and as I understand it, it's only been about a week or so that they decided, yeah, she's going to try this.
Well, I mean, that's it. I think maybe, here's the thing, guys, is it takes so much to do it. It isn't, we'll talk to some of these drivers that may have the ability to do it, but to be able to coordinate just all those logistics on the equipment, yeah. and the team owner and the sponsors and everything that it takes to enter and have a car to field is just really hard. I mean, it's so much more than just the driving. And it's, but we, I had been talking with her about this for a couple years, you know, and it was something that she wanted to do, and she's raced like Pikes Peak, she's raced Formula, wow. she's raced, you know, karting. So she has that familiarity in the other series, and the last 2 years has been pretty serious about up in the NASCAR game, getting in and licensed and all that experience. So yeah, maybe they just pulled it together to be able, over the last couple weeks, to be able to make that announcement. But it's been something that they've been at least working towards for a long time.
Logistically, though, this has to, it has to be so perfect, because if there's a rain delay at Indy, that could delay her getting in the helicopter to get to the airport to get to Charlotte, right?
100%. And we looked at where with Kyle Larson, who had the talent, obviously he's a multi-time NASCAR Cup Series champion, and then it qualified so well at Indy, but he had rain. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it has nothing to do with even your equipment or what happens in the race. It's just Mother Nature and weather. And it just prevented timing wise for him to be mm-hmm. able to really do it successfully. And I guess I'm hoping not. No one, if you even ask, I've asked a number of people over the course of the day, what are we looking like tomorrow? Nobody wants to talk about it. Yeah. So you don't even bring it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, that could be a factor tomorrow, too.
Mm-hmm. I did read one interview where she said if she has to make a choice, it's Indy.
Yeah. She's already there.
So, yeah.
It makes that easier, right?
That seems like a sensible choice.
Right? Yeah. Yes.
But, yeah. Well, you know this race, guys. It is a piece of immortality. If you're able to, and anything can happen. There are first-time drivers who end up winning this. There are people that come from the back. There, you know, obviously pole sitters have a chance. So anything can happen. The race just takes on a life of its own. And, you know, she'll be there and in that race, and it changes your life. If you win the Coca-Cola 600, that's great. That's anytime you can win a race at that level. But if you win the Indy 500, it's one of those, for the rest of your life, that's how you're introduced kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a quick break, Dane. But real quick, the person that's starting in pole position, is that Alex Palou?
Yeah, Alex Palou, and he is racing for Chip Ganassi. He's absolutely amazing. So we could talk a little bit about him, you know, when we come back, or we can, you know, there's a lot to say about him. He's obviously certainly a favorite.
All right. We're talking with Dane Neal. He's at Indy for the Indy 500, and everything happens tomorrow in just about 12 hours. More coming up here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And roughly 12 hours from now, you're going to be listening to the pre-race show with Dane Neal, the Indy 500 pre-race show. And we're always locked into that. We've told you before, Dane, that we've been Indy 500 fans forever. And this, as many times as you've been involved with this, You never lose your enthusiasm for it, do you?
I don't know how you could. It is, for those people that have, and this, you know, falls in line with one of those bucket list events that even if you're not a racing fan, you will find yourself, you know, watching it, like the Kentucky Derby or some other things. And, I mean, it is, especially, you know, it's on Memorial Day, especially the 250th anniversary of the country. There's nothing more, I think, Americana than the Indy 500 and just the spectacle of it. It's the kind of thing, when you go there, it's 350,000 people. There's nothing like it. If you've been to a Bears game, you know, 70,000 people. It's electric. It's just, you know, every bit of it. And there's so many traditions that go along with it that just add to it. So what happens on the track obviously gets a lot of attention. It's what's on TV, but you've got, you know, the parades. You've got our very own Jim Cornelison does Back Home Again in Indiana. You've got the Purdue band. You've got the flyover. There is just so much about it that are, you know, is sort of indescribable that you really do have to experience it. So, yes. And, you know, you want to say every race takes on a life of its own, and it does, but pretty often that, you know, that life of its own is sort of familiar because Alex Palou is potentially winning. You know, he is a four-time Indy Series champ, relatively young guy. I've been interviewing him since he, you know, got into the series, and he is just so, he's so fun and just positive. And
he won last year, right?
Yes, he did. So he's coming in as he's defending series champion. He's won four, right, in his young career. He is the defending Indy 500 champion. He's also the pole sitter. So I don't want to say it doesn't seem fair, but he certainly got it figured out.
How about the engines for this year? In a lot of years, it seems to be a competition between Chevys and Hondas. Who's under most of the hoods this year?
Well, it's, you know, you've got a kind of a blend there. You've got those are the two manufacturers, and it looks like a pretty good mix of them. There, I don't know that anyone has a distinctive advantage. What you do have is the manufacturers are involved, but then also those team owners. You know, you've got, you know, whether it's Penske or whether it's Ganassi, you know, some of these very large teams are able to field a bunch of, so they're very well funded. It's a spec series, you know, they try to keep it as similar as possible. We had some disqualifications where people made some modifications, and then you've got people that are able to, you know, to get in. There's talented drivers that are just kind of one-offs. Takuma Sato will be on with us tomorrow, too, racing for Bobby Rahal's team along with Dave Letterman and Mike Lanigan. And some of these, even like a partial series like Elio Castroneves, you know, they're just so identified with this race that they just focus just on this. And they've got a chance to win. We do talk with Elio about that as well. Long time, you know, winning those the 500s with Penske, but then, you know, winning with Meyer Shank on a smaller team. So it can happen. But usually, you've got some of these powerhouses really do just, I would say, have an advantage.
If Elio Castroneves were to win, and he's my favorite driver, wouldn't that be number five for him?
It would be, and that's. He'll be the only one. So there's a, you know, this group of sort of four, you know, that are the elite ones that have done it, that have four guys who have won four. If Elio wins that, he'll be the only one with five. And I don't know. We just talked about Alex Palou and how great he is. So maybe he could do it if he sticks with it, if he doesn't jump to Formula One. But talking with Elio, he is such a great ambassador for the sport because he is, so he's so identifiable, obviously, with it and the positives, and he's just so, you know, enthusiastic. He has won Dancing with the Stars. You know, I don't know.
Right.
Everybody knows that, so I don't know if that. But so he has a lot of name recognition with America, and just great. Talking with him, it was interesting to hear someone that people always ask him, like, "What's your favorite?" And he'll say something along the lines of, "Like, how do you choose your favorite kid?" Right? You know, you love them all. Well, what was the most memorable one? And I thought it was interesting, and I was actually at this race, too. He mentioned that the most memorable one that he had was 2003 when he ended up losing to Gil DeFerrin, where everything went well. You know, you can be as prepared as possible, and certainly all of these drivers are very talented, but, you know, there's always something that goes wrong, whether it's a pit stop or a penalty or equipment, or maybe it's the weather. And that was one where he said everything was going well, everything was right, but it just didn't. It wasn't enough because, you know, he ended up just coming up a little bit short. And that is the most memorable one for him, which I thought
interesting.
Was really crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I became a fan of his after his first win because, and I remember putting this on Facebook. I said, if you have children, you should make them look at him as a winner because he was so gracious to all of the other drivers. Yeah. It was like he was concerned about them. And I said, I love this guy. He's the winner, but he's worried about them. And like you said, he's just so positive.
Yeah. No, he's great. Well, and so AJ Foyt is one of those guys that I, you know, having interacted with almost all of them, you know, not everybody who's really great at something is a friendly person.
Yes.
You know, they don't meet your heroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And AJ Foyt, he'll agree. He would probably scowl and then agree is that he's kind of bristly and isn't the friendliest guy, and you know some of those things. And although you know, obviously successful and is an amazing driver, just isn't maybe the best ambassador on the public relations side for the sport. But with Elio, you have every bit of that, and so it's great to see. And I know that the series and racing, you know, loves the fact that he's so successful because he's just such a great ambassador for it. And you look at it, the sport, you know, racing is this is the second like sellout in a row that they've had huge crowds, and it's pretty amazing. And you don't have, let's say it's a specific, it isn't the 100th anniversary or something that would, you know, just inspire people to get on board. They just love it. And I got to say that they're working to make more and more sort of fun elements within it, because you guys will remember, you know, the Indy 500 used to have this sort of mystique as like a Hell's Angels kind of event where, you know, you've got the snake pit. It was dangerous and, you know, which I think had its own allure. And now it's certainly, and there's certainly some of that. People are, I think, overdoing it. But just kind of building in as much fun as possible, whether it's the concerts, whether it's some of the celebrity appearances, a ton of that. And I don't know if you guys saw, but they have the Weenie 500 now.
Yes,
I love that.
It got a little ugly, too. I mean, those weenies were racing and wow.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm shocked because I would say that in general, they're slow and they're kind of goofy looking.
Yeah.
They had a big crowd. People absolutely loved it. And
it's just
fun. Of course,
fun.
We're partial to the Chicago dog or the Chi dog.
Yeah, the Chi dog.
And I don't know what a Seattle dog is, but anyway, people loved it. Andy Richter, you know, longtime guy with Conan O'Brien, comedian. It's just a lot of fun. They're just building so much fun into it. So it's more than just what happens on Sunday. It's like a whole week.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask, every year it seems like they tweak it just a little bit. Are there any significant rule or track changes this year?
I don't. None come to mind as far as something. You know, I know that with the boost, they were working on some different things. People are just, we saw a couple people get, you know, have a disqualification, get pushed to the back of the field. Everyone just takes it so seriously, you know, and it seems minor when you hear about what it was, some sort of unauthorized adhesive to attach something that really wasn't that important anyway. But I think they take it serious, and, you know, you want to make it as fair as possible because there is just so much at stake, not just the millions of dollars that these teams put up, but just, you know, what it can mean. It really will change your life if you win.
Mm-hmm. All right, before we cut you loose, we understand that Brendan Fraser, wonderful actor, has a great new movie coming out. Are you going to have a chance to see him, talk to him? He's the honorary starter of the Indy 500.
Yeah, this is one of those events that really pulls in, like you'll see Lady Gaga or the President of the United States, or the Backstreet Boys. You know, it isn't all racing personalities, and they'll bring people in. I don't know that I'll see him. I'll be in the media center overlooking the track doing the broadcast, you know, doing what it is that we're doing leading up to the race, and it's just so huge here. I hope they bring him in so he can share, because what I love is when they bring in some of these celebrities, and oftentimes they're, you know, promoting a movie or some sort of project, and sometimes they're not even aware of, okay, Indy 500, I'll show up.
Oh.
And then, like, they're just overcome with the magnitude of what they've been a part of, And it really does. That's pretty cool when you see how it affects them.
Yeah.
Well, that beep means you've got less than 12 hours before you're back on the radio here with the pre-race show. We can't thank you enough.
Have so much fun, Dane, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Take care.
Definitely tune in and have a great rest of your night.
Sure. We'll be listening. Thank you, Dane.
More coming up. Stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Yes, we are gluten-free, and this is the first gluten-free radio show.
That's right.
We've been a gluten-free radio show since roughly 2001, and we are celebrating Celiac Awareness Month this month, and a little later, Johnny will have one of her gluten-free recipes.
That's right. So every Saturday night, we've been featuring an aspect of a gluten-free lifestyle, and we've had wonderful feedback from folks that are saying, oh, I had no idea that there's a 100% gluten-free hotel in Louisiana. So we had those folks on last week on the show. Mm-hmm. Well, this week we are talking about a 100% gluten-free bakery on the north side of Chicago in Andersonville. And joining us is the owner and operator, Johanna Van Dorf. And thank you for joining us tonight. Swing your microphone around.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
We had so much fun talking off the air because you're in my old neighborhood. And it's so fun to see the neighborhood is just really hopping. And they just announced that the Swedish Midsummer Festival is coming back.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
In June. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you have been on Balmoral in Andersonville for how many years?
We're in our 11th year.
Really?
Yes. And we've been in business for 15 years.
Congratulations.
Okay, give us the backstory. Are you diagnosed with celiac disease, or how did this all happen, and how did you get involved with it?
Great question. Well, I'm not celiac. I don't have food allergies, but I believe in the right to dessert for everybody.
Oh, girl, I want the T-shirt. I believe in the right for dessert for everybody.
Yeah, so we started it. It was really for kids, not to feel different from their pals. You never want to feel different, so to have ooey gooey treats. And I was in marketing and in the corporate world, and never really felt like I fit in. And a coworker's family was celiac, and we were going to go into business together. We ended up not, but it percolated, deflowered, percolated for about a year. And then I was laid off, and then it just started. And then it took a life of its own.
Wow.
Pretty quickly.
Does it surprise you when, and I follow a number of celiac and gluten-free Facebook pages and social media in general, we don't have a lot of you out there. I mean, so often people say, well, I need a cake for graduation. Where do I go? Go to Deflowered.
Yes.
You come up all the time because, girl, you've kind of cornered that market.
Oh, well, there's a few of us out there, but it's so nice. And the supporters and customers are great. And they'll travel and come see us because there aren't a lot of dedicated. There are more and more coming up. But when we started about 15 years ago, there wasn't. So people travel.
And for people who say, well, I've gone to a donut shop and they offer gluten-free donuts. If you have an absolute intolerance to gluten,
which I do,
then you really can't take a chance in a shop that is handling regular quote-unquote food because there could be cross-contamination. So that's really scary.
Or even something in the air.
It is. Yes, it's so scary. So we don't allow any gluten to come into the facility. We take it very seriously when we hire. Your primary goal is not to kill anybody.
That's a good goal. Thank you. I like that.
You guys should adopt that.
Yeah. So, and if they're like, okay, I'm in. So I think the biggest hurdle is learning all the allergens.
Yeah.
We do gluten-free. We have gluten-free, dairy-free, gluten-free, vegan options.
Wow.
We try to stay away from as many allergens as possible and to feed as many people with allergies.
What was the hardest thing for you to do as you were setting up the bakery? Mm-hmm. Was there any physical thing that was the hardest thing if you want to make sure that everything is gluten-free?
Well, just learning everything. With every ingredient, we research and make sure it's 100% gluten-free. Liquor is nice to have in some bakery items. It's just researching that the where we buy our products, they're also practicing safe practices.
Right. Sure.
And it's not hiding anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Your primary flour that you use, and again, for people who are new to this, gluten is the protein that you find in wheat, rye, barley, and some oats.
Yes.
So that still leaves a whole number of flour options. So which one do you primarily enjoy baking with?
We mix our own flour. We use brown rice flour, tapioca flour, and potato starch primarily in all of our sweets with some sweet rice flour. And then we have bread flour mix that we make ourselves and it has some millet flour, sorghum. We don't use any soy or corn.
Interesting, because of allergies to both. Yeah, and I've often thought that even though gluten-free can be trying, corn and soy is really difficult because it's in so many products.
It hides. It is.
Yeah.
It is. We try to stay away from it as much as possible.
How hard was it for you to come up with a good gluten-free bread recipe? And I'm asking because Johnny has made homemade gluten-free bread, and it's wonderful. But boy, is that labor intensive, and you have to be so careful with how you're you're mixing things.
Because sometimes, and you'll agree, I think, when you're making a gluten-free recipe, sometimes it looks like it's gone wrong.
Yes.
It's like too sticky. And how is this ever going to turn into a loaf of bread? It's just different, right?
It is. It's just different. And we just, bread is very difficult, and we've just kept on practicing with our bread flour. We're still working on bread. We haven't mastered it. We have a dairy-free sandwich loaf, and we also have a vegan vegan baguette that's delicious, and we just mastered that. And that's like, I have a great team. We have one gentleman who was able to really master the baguette, and then we have a challah, which is good, but we couldn't make it dairy-free, which people wish we could, but it has butter. But it is very difficult.
When something is vegan, that is qualified how?
Vegan is no animal products, no butter, eggs.
No eggs.
Which also gives lift to product, to bread.
What do you substitute for eggs?
We use psyllium husk or flax.
Psyllium husk is what you find in some...
Like Metamucil.
Exactly. I was thinking, what would I use instead of that? That.
Yes, or like a flax egg or a chia egg we use. People sometimes use applesauce. I don't like the flavor of applesauce, but there's different things. It's like science. It's hard, but bread,
It is very scientific, and when you are attempting to make something from scratch and it's an idea you have in your head, you are literally starting from scratch saying, okay, what will work with my vision of this cake or this bread or whatever.
And hopefully it won't kill anybody.
That's our goal.
that's our primary goal.
That's the other t-shirt.
Yes.
Deflowered. We don't want to kill anybody.
Right. But bread has been very difficult.
What's the most popular thing in your bakery?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question.
Chocolate chip cookies.
No, you would think so. Yeah. That's how I test other bakeries, is how good their chocolate chip cookie is. But our most pop, I think it's eye candy. It's the vegan oatmeal cream pie. It's like a little Debbie.
Ooh.
And people just love it.
Because it brings back memories.
Food is all about memories.
Yeah.
And we feel fortunate to be part of people's memories for birthdays and weddings and all celebrations. Our lemon bar is really popular. We have what we call a puck of love, which is based on a ding dong. Nothing really fussy. We don't do very precise. We do ooey gooey and good.
I love that. That's my mantra. I'm going to make it ooey gooey and good. Oh my gosh. We are talking about a bakery that is gluten free, the whole thing. And I think it's safe to say also vegan and dairy-free. Okay, because those are huge to folks who have to be concerned about those things. And the bakery's at 1477 West Balmoral in Chicago in the Andersonville neighborhood. We'll continue with Joanna. She's the owner and operator of Deflowered here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That is the gluten-free grocery list wrap. That's by... Phil hates gluten. And you can look that up on YouTube.
Phil hates gluten.
Yeah.
Yes.
We are talking about a wonderful bakery that is right here in Chicago in Andersonville, the Deflowered Bakery. And Joanna Van Dorf is the owner. She is in studio with us. And we are once again observing the fact that May is Celiac Awareness Month.
That's right. And there just aren't a lot of places where you can go and get ooey gooey treats. And that's where Deflowered comes in. And by the way, I had to answer a question from a texter who said, is that Deflower? That means something completely different than Deflowered, as in flower.
But the blatant plug light has started flashing, so the address and the phone number and stuff like that.
We're located at 1477 West Balmoral in Andersonville. We're right off of Clark.
And if people want to call you?
We can be reached at 773-234-5733.
And the website is?
Deflowered Bakery.com, and that's flour, as in baking flour, F-L-O-U-R-E-D. Don't go the other one.
And I do want to emphasize that I love the fact that you are open on weekends. So you want to explain what days you're open and closed?
Yes, that's a great question. When we had the storefront, we decided that we would be open till 7 during the week, 11 to 7. Andersonville doesn't wake up early, and there's lots of coffee shops that are great to visit in the area. So we're open from on Tuesday through Friday from 11 to 7 to allow people to get to us after work. Mm-hmm. And then on the weekends from 9 to 5, both Saturday and Sunday.
And Sunday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. And you guys are also active on social media, because I just followed you on Facebook.
Yes.
Under Deflowered Bakery. Right.
And Instagram on Deflowered Bakery.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because you don't have enough to do.
No, No. I'm lucky we have a great social media person that just came on board a couple of years, and she's great.
We were talking off the air about the neighborhood, and I was telling you, growing up there, it was still a very heavily Swedish neighborhood, where 9 o'clock in the morning, the Swedes would come out and sweep the sidewalk in front of their business, which was really wonderful. But one of the things that the neighborhood was known for, because of the Swedish bakery that used to be across the street, basically from where you are located, was marzipan. So a listener wants to know, have you ever done gluten-free marzipan?
You know, that's a great question. We have not, but it would be easy to.
It's almond paste.
It's almond paste, and it's naturally gluten-free.
Right.
It just has a tree nut allergy, but we've been asked about a princess cake.
Mm-hmm.
We've been asked. We haven't done that.
But if you do, it has to be that funny green.
Right.
And my experience has been that marzipan is one of those male-female dividers.
I agree.
I would not walk across this control board for marzipan. Johnny loves it. Every woman I've ever talked to loves marzipan.
Really?
Men, meh.
Well, when I was in high school, it was a thing for the girls. If it was your birthday, you got a marzipan cake, and the guys are like, "Is there anything else there?"
No? It's beautiful.
It is.
It's really pretty. The green. There's a great bakery in Andersonville that does a great non gluten free princess cake, but we haven't done that yet.
Okay.
Well, we can agree it's a great paint.
No, stop. You have so many wonderful things in front of you. You said carrot cake is one of your biggies.
Our carrot cake is one of the most popular items. We sell it at Whole Foods and around the city. At our wholesale partners, which we call with great taste, is all on our website at deflowerbakery.com. But our carrot cake is naturally gluten-free and dairy-free. So we pair it with our cream cheese frosting. If you could have cream cheese frosting, it's delicious. And then if you are dairy-free, we pair it with our vegan vanilla buttercream.
Mm.
So
you say at Whole Foods, would it be labeled as Deflowered Bakery?
Yes.
Really? I've not seen that.
It's mostly in the frozen section.
Okay.
But does that also explain why, if I do a search for Deflowered Bakery, sometimes some Milwaukee locations come up, and they're just stores that are carrying your products?
Yes. We just, before the pandemic, we were in Milwaukee Whole Foods, two of them, and one in Milwaukee proper and one in Wauwatosa. We just began within the last 6 months back in Milwaukee area, and then Fairgrounds Coffee. So it's great.
So what are some of the other things? It teases, because we'll take a break for news and we'll try some of these things.
I brought some of our Pucks of Love. We have what was inspired by a zebra cake. We have a little martina.
What's a zebra
cake? It's like a hostess treat cake chocolate cake with a white frosting on the outside.
Oh, okay. White with the chocolate. Plastic or the black squirrelies on top.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we had a little Marty based on the Disney show movie, but now we have a little Martina with a pink swiggle that has strawberry filling, vanilla cake with strawberry filling.
And you have cake pops,
I
see.
We have cake pops. We have vegan cake pops and red velvet and vanilla vanilla. We have our cosmic brownie based on the cosmic brownie lemon bars. Which,
wait, time out. What's a cosmic brownie?
Oh, it's also like a lunchbox favorite. It's a brownie with a chocolate fudge topping and sprinkles.
Of course. Because, you know, a brownie's just not enough.
Right.
You know, yeah. We got to up it.
The brownie actually was our first item that we made.
Is it really? Mm-hmm. Not chocolate chip cookies?
Not chocolate chip cookies. And it was followed by a caramel chocolate oat bar, which we call the gateway drug to deflowered.
It's a gateway drug! I'm sure that you have people in the neighborhood who wander in, and they don't have to be gluten-free.
Yes. We have a large customer base that's not gluten-free, and just mm-hmm. they're supporters. They may come in with a partner, and then they enjoy it just as much.
Yeah.
Do you find that that is a real compliment, in the same way that sometimes when people are over at our house for dinner and Johnny serves a gluten-free dinner and doesn't say it's gluten-free, people who aren't gluten-free, if they think it just tastes really, really good, mm-hmm. that's a great compliment.
It's a great compliment. It's wonderful when some people say, I didn't tell anybody, because people, you know, have a preconceived notion of what gluten-free will taste yeah. like. And so when they say they didn't even know, it's a great compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started, I just wanted to get our brownies, everything into someone's mouth, because they would walk by really quickly. Oh, gluten-free?
Yeah.
So it just, like, come that's, here and taste.
How many different products do you have now?
Oh, gosh. My staff, too many, they'll say. But we have about, like, close to 100. We do.
What?
Wow.
I know. We rotate. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's probably not a good business decision. But
but you want to please everyone.
But it's nice to come in for people who have been so limited.
Yes.
In what they're able to come in and see, like, the whole case of different items. It's so rewarding. I think for the staff, I think it's so nice to see. So people have cried because they needed
sure.
a birthday cake for their child, or
yeah.
they hadn't had a lemon bar in 5 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, food is such a big part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, in Steve's case, I think the only thing you've ever said that you kind of had a craving for was when we drive by White Castle. And I said, you know yeah. what? I'm not going there. Yep. I am not going to master gluten-free White Castles. We don't need them.
Oh, my gosh.
Out of all the things.
I love it.
We're talking about the Deflowered Bakery. It's on Balmoral, 1477 West Balmoral in Chicago in the Andersonville neighborhood. Stay with us. We're going to test some goodies during the break. More coming up here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Yes, gluten-free rock and roll. That's the only kind we serve here.
There's a gluten-free folk song, gluten-free rap, and a yeah. gluten-free rock and roll song, as there should be.
We're covering all the genres.
That's
and
right.
We are talking about a wonderful bakery that is right in Andersonville in Chicago, Deflowered Bakery. Johanna Van Dorf is in the studio with us. And we've had some people that are texting us at 312-981-7200. Several people want to know if you ship things out of state.
Yes, we do. We do. We have a shippable item list. Things that don't require refrigeration will get to you in one piece.
Mm-hmm.
So if you email us at info@defloweredbakery.com, we could share that list with you. And we usually ship out at the beginning of each week to make sure it doesn't hang out in a
post
UPS
office. Yeah, yeah.
Over the weekend. It should be in your tummy
yeah.
before the weekend.
Do you know off the top of your head, like, the farthest place that's contacted you for goodies?
Well, we've shipped all over the nation,
mm-hmm.
but we haven't done overseas, just because just the freshness.
Yeah, of course.
But it will travel, because people come on their way to the airport to go different
sure,
places.
Sure, mm-hmm. Because a listener says, my son lives in Arizona and he has a celiac, so I'd like to ship something to him in Arizona. So you've yeah, done
absolutely.
Arizona.
Arizona was actually one of the first places we shipped to.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I bet California would be all over this, because we find when we travel to California, yeah. it's much easier to go to a restaurant and feel comfortable and safe
mm-hmm.
eating gluten-free. So,
yeah. when people come to the bakery and visit us from California, I'm like, you must have so many options in California. And they
but
do.
Don't go to California.
No.
Stay here.
We're here.
Okay.
We're here.
Please stay here.
So during the news, we sampled what tastes exactly like the St. Louis butter cake.
Oh, boy, is that delicious.
Holy moly.
Thank you.
And one of the things, here's one of the yardsticks I use. A, it was delicious. B, it tasted just like the butter cake. C, no aftertaste.
No.
Yay.
Thank you.
Well
and no
done.
Grittiness either. No. That's another challenge I find that sometimes people go, well, everything I've ever had that's gluten-free is gritty.
Texture is a very hard thing. And that is why we do not have a vegan vanilla cake. It has eluded us for all these years. So
really?
It's because we haven't been able yet to get the texture perfect.
And yet you can do chocolate.
Chocolate it's just the vanilla cake comes out like a corn muffin for some reason.
Interesting.
That's our challenge. It keeps on, we keep on trying, but we'll get it. We'll get it.
Now, do you actually get your hands in the dough and do the, because you've got so many things going on to make the place work.
I don't bake as much as I'd like to. Some mornings, like, I'm going to bake this. I want to try this. And the day just gets away from
me.
But I try.
How many people on your staff contribute to the new recipes you come up with?
You know, we have a core group of bakers in the back, about five. But everyone tastes, and we brainstorm together, like, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? My staff loves food. They're always going to check out other bakeries, other places, and bringing back ideas. And we talk about it. We have a great wholesale partner, the Looking Glass Theater, which likes to do treats based on the play. So they'll come to us with an idea, and then we have to brainstorm and create treats based on the theme of the play.
I didn't know the Looking Glass Theater did that. That good for them.
Yeah, it's great. We're just within about a year now since they reopened. Since the pandemic.
So some of the other things that we have here. Now, you mentioned you also do a lemon square.
We have a lemon bar that was one of our most popular when we started. It was one of the three items that we started with.
Do you do a lemon cake?
We do a lemon cake. We also do a dairy-free lemon cake.
Because I was at Starbucks and I was standing in line, and a woman in front of me had a meltdown because they had run out of the Starbucks lemon cake. And I went, wow, that seems to be really popular. So I went home and I came up with my version in gluten-free. And I make smaller loaves so I can share a loaf and then make the lemon glaze, you know, put on top, and then put the little lemon zest on top of that. And to my friends who love Starbucks, they say, it's better.
I'm sure.
It's better. And they're not gluten-free, but they go, oh, my gosh.
You use all fresh lemon?
All fresh lemon. Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. And I think now my girlfriend, who has a very fine taste bud, she says, I think they're using lemon extract. I don't think they're using real lemon juice and zest and such. So Starbucks, correct me if I'm wrong. You can send it to the station if you'd like. But
yeah. And I think if you make something lemon, it should taste like lemon. We use all fresh fruit, and that's important.
Yes.
So
isn't that funny? Just talking about it, you get that little
right
by your ears where you're like, I can, it's like a pickle. You get that sensation.
Do you sometimes try to come up with recipes by tying them to events? Like, what would be the best thing to have at
graduation?
Yeah.
We do. We're in the throes of graduation season. So this year, we launched a standard cake design that you could order online just to make people's not having too much many decisions, just a cake with a design that they can customize certain items. And then there's a lot of trays. We do a lot of trays, cooking and bar trays. And we try to give options of vegan options, dairy-free options. This summer, we do cakes of the week. So for the summertime, like you were talking about lemon, we do although it's winter fruit, we do a lot of lemon because lemonade. We try to do seasonal. Strawberries are coming into season. We did a month of cakes based on herbs from the farmer's market.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I think Jeff, our producer du jour, he said that on the weekends you do savory as well as the sweet.
We've been asked for savory so much. It's a big demand for savory. So we've been playing around with savory scones, like a jalapeno popper scone, cheddar chive. Galette's made vegan and non-vegan with squash, seasonal fruits. We'll do a lot of tomato galettes with cheese.
And the galette is, it's like a tart.
Like a free-form pie.
Yes. I say it's rustic.
It's rustic. It's rustic.
Yeah. Because the crust kind of comes up around the edges, and if it's not perfect, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Which I love.
Yes.
Because that's not where I shine, is perfect things. So rustic is great.
Yes. It's a good word for it, too. Lister from 773 area code says, do you make wedding cakes? Oh, do you?
We do. We do make wedding cakes. On our website, you can order a tasting box based on your allergens, dairy-free, vegan, or just gluten-free. And then we have a great team of cake decorators, and if you have ideas of what your cake would like to look like, we can make that happen. Mm-hmm. And we do wedding cakes.
Another text from a 773 area code says, OMG, I love deflowered. They made my son's birthday cake, and it was a hit.
I am sure you do have people that become emotional when they realize, for example, their wedding can be safe. Mm-hmm. Because Steve was diagnosed 25 years ago. We've been married 42 years. I remember he was sick as a dog on our honeymoon.
Oh my gosh.
Because we had a meal at our reception, and by the time we got to the hotel, he was having all, but we didn't know it at that time. Mm-hmm. We thought, oh, this is marriage anxiety. He's sweating and shaking, and what's going on? And in retrospect, we knew it was as a result of the food that we had, the cake that he ate.
And very long story short, and I've told this before, but for some people who don't understand what celiac can do, when I was diagnosed, I was in the throes of a really bad celiac event. I was losing 12 pounds a week. They thought I had cancer. I got lucky. I got a European doctor who recognized the signs and said, have you ever been tested for celiac sprue? I said, I never heard of it. Ran the test, came back positive, changed my diet, feel better. So for the people who say, oh, I'm so sorry you have... Don't be sorry. Be happy. This was the best diagnosis I ever had in my life.
It doesn't have to be terrible. Give great food.
Yeah.
And it's usually diagnosed with
Now
kids.
You can.
It was
right.
terrible.
It was terrible. You're right.
And again, I've told the story before, but the first loaf of bread we got.
From Whole Foods, because they had a frozen, it wasn't frozen, it was
shrink-wrapped with an end date of a year.
Oh, my gosh. A year down the road. And we're like, what? So we got home. We go, well, at least we got some bread here. And we couldn't eat it. And we put it out for the birds. And I'm not kidding you. It was January, and the birds wouldn't eat it. We're like, oh, it's not just us. Because the birds are like, no.
That's when Johnny turned our kitchen gluten-free and learned how to cook herself.
Which is great.
Yeah. And once you go that route, because some folks, I had a discussion with a friend recently. She said, well, my son is celiac, and I do not want to make our household gluten-free because he has to be able to live in a real world. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, now that's different. I can understand saying with your children, okay, this is the reality of what the world is like out there, and this is what we have to do to be safe. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of an eye-opener for me, because I thought, well, I would just clean everything out, as I did, donated all my cookware, my blenders, my mixers and everything, and started with scratch because I didn't even want a crumb to come in contact with the food that I was preparing. Right. But her attitude was, he's got to learn how to live in this world where everything isn't gluten-free.
Yeah, we have kids who come in and they know their allergens. They're so eloquent.
Yeah.
This is what I can have, this is what I can't. And then I know parents always worry when the kids go to college.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of, you have to watch out for things.
Sure,
but
sure.
More and more college food programs are...
Yeah.
Catering to allergens.
We're talking with Joanna, and she is the owner and operator of Deflowered Bakery. It's a gluten-free bakery in Chicago's Andersonville, 1477 West Balmoral. Before she gets out of here, we'll repeat how you can get a hold of her and find out about ordering that wedding cake, that graduation cake, or just a whole bunch of ooey-gooey goodness. Stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking about gluten-free goodies that you can get at Deflowered Bakery.
That's a sweet little song.
That is. And that was a find from our producer du jour, Jeff. Who is that and what is that?
That was the Hot Toddies, a celiac love song.
A celiac love song.
Okay.
So we've just about covered, we need a hardcore country celiac song,
yeah.
Gluten-free song.
Yep.
That's sweet. Wow. Well, speaking of sweet, we have Joanna, and she is the owner and operator of Deflowered, a gluten-free bakery in Chicago's Andersonville. We had talking about the fact that you can and do make wedding cakes. Off the air, Jeff was telling us about a delivery you did at a castle in Dyer, Indiana last week.
Yes.
Who knew there was a castle in Dyer?
I said that to Jeff. I said, I didn't know it. And then when he came back, I'm like, did it look like a castle? It was beautiful. They posted pictures.
That's wild.
It was great.
I
was
like, do you know who owns this castle?
It's called the Meyer Castle.
Uh-huh.
And it's definitely a venue, but it's an estate, and you kind of drive up these little hills in, right, it's right outside of Dyer, Indiana, and it's you open up onto this like pastoral sort of scenes, and then there's little outbuildings and this beautiful like, grotto area and a big bar.
Perfect
and,
for a wedding.
Right, and then peacocks, of course.
Peacocks? Yeah. What?
Yep. Yeah.
And you have to drive across the moat and the dragons.
I was going to say the moat.
The troll was there, but he was off.
But he's gluten-free.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Again, that's a case of you have a perfect setting, and you're thinking, okay, well, I can't eat the food, and I can't have the cake, but yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. So what are your big plans? So you're into your 11th year. You're making, in some cases, over 100 different items, sweet and savory. I know, you're grimacing because you're like, oh, that sounds terrible, but it's the reality. 5 years down the road, where do you hope that Deflowered would be?
Well, there's so much opportunity. We're looking at possibly getting a production kitchen so we could service more wholesale accounts.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Growing that. We're launching into Michigan a little bit. We're at Neon Moon Gelato in Lakeside. I feel like it's not probably the best time to travel with the gas prices.
Yeah.
But we feel fortunate to have partners outside of the Chicagoland area. And then we go as far as St. Charles. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully we'll grow our bandwidth, you know, neighboring
Well, speaking
states.
Of traveling, do you ever travel to other countries? For example, in Europe, boy, if you're gluten-free, you don't have a problem.
You know what? Ireland has a huge population of celiac.
Yep.
And then Italy, which I think is the...
I know.
It's such a bad joke. It's like, it's terrible, but they have great, in Italy, they have great options for gluten-free.
Oh, a friend of ours sent us a picture of the gelato shop, and over on one side of the shop was all the gluten-free gelatos, mm-hmm. separated from those over here.
They do a great job.
Yeah, and the pasta and everything, and like, it's really?
It's delicious, I hear.
Yeah.
I hear Spain has a lot of great mm-hmm. gluten-free bakeries. I have not traveled, but it's on my bucket list.
Because you can't leave the bakery.
The staff thinks we should go on a field trip.
Do you ever close
Europe?
Do you close during for a couple of weeks during the year?
We used to close for a week after Labor Day, including Labor Day weekend, mm-hmm. and then after New Year's. And mm-hmm. so we take shorter breaks because, you know, my staff, you know, everyone needs to pay rent. So mm-hmm. we work around it.
Oh, there is that.
Yeah. I know. So we work around it, and like, who wants to work? We will close in January, but we are staying, we're still baking because wholesale accounts and people want, whoever wants to work, has that option.
Speaking of paying, check with your own financial advisor, but a fact-finding trip to Europe could be a tax deduction. That's a business expense.
The staff wants to go. We were thinking Copenhagen.
Oh,
it would be. You can come. Come along.
Yes. Now, speaking of holidays, I bet you're slammed around the holidays. Do you make anything special for the holidays?
That's a great question. Thanksgiving is our busiest holiday because everyone eats pie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we don't know. We make pie by special order. We've been making more pies, but that's what we make for Thanksgiving. And
pumpkin.
Pumpkin, apple, vegan apple, vegan pumpkin.
Pecan.
Pecan, thank you. We did cranberry pie, but we were holding off on that for Christmas. But it's our busiest holiday, so we're open The beginning of the week, we're open Thanksgiving Day for part of the day, just to, for the last minute people to get a pie, and then we close for the weekend. And so that's our busiest holiday. So we have some blackout dates, and then Christmas and Hanukkah, and December is just
crazy.
Not crazy, but it's spread out more. So Thanksgiving is our busiest holiday.
And if folks come into Deflowered around Thanksgiving and they find muffins, as in stuffin' muffins, a savory, I shared with Joanna my stuffin' muffin recipe in these little bundt pans, because you have a chocolate zucchini that's made in those bundt pans, little individual servings, and a dollop of cranberry sauce in the middle. So that would be my contribution to
Deflowered. Do you know how hungry I am for them right now?
I know. I want a stuffin' muffin right now.
I love stuffin' muffins. I love it. We've been sharing great recipes offline.
So. I'm going to come hang out with you sometime.
I would love it.
And we're going to just, because I have my cookbook ready to go. My goal 25 years ago was to start documenting things that were successful, taking pictures of them. And my whole idea was proving that you can have comfort food gluten-free. Then all of a sudden, gluten-free became cool. And everybody had a cookbook. And I said, well, maybe I'll just leave mine over here. And so I haven't done it.
You should do it.
I know. But it became a thing. Thank you, Gwyneth Paltrow.
This could be the year.
It could be.
Yes. Remember,
I'd buy it.
Gwyneth Paltrow came out talking about how she was on a gluten-free diet, and everybody went, oh, well, Gwyneth is doing it. Let's try it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in tonight. Oh, my gosh.
Again, folks, it's Deflowered Bakery, defloweredbakery.com. At 1477 West Balmoral Avenue in Chicago. And you can go to info@defloweredbakery.com. The phone is 773-234-5733. Closed Monday, Tuesday through Friday, open 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And if you're getting hungry right now, they will be open Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Well, yes. Thank you so much.
Oh,
thank you for doing what you're doing, Joanna. And, you know, hats off to everybody that works for you, because you are really, really appreciated. We might not cry when we come in, but our hearts are singing when we know.
Or we may.
That's right. I may cry when I get on the scales after trying some of the things that she shared with us tonight.
But I would love to get some of the music. I love the music.
Yes.
We'll play it at the bakery.
It's gonna head your way.
See us anytime.
Oh, thank you.
We love having you in here. And again, Deflowered Bakery is in Andersonville, Chicago's Andersonville, 1477 West Balmoral. Tonight, I will have one of my recipes coming up, so that's one more piece of our celebration of Celiac Awareness Month here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman of WGN Radio, what a treat. She was just
literally.
Absolutely, yeah, literally. She was just delightful. If you're just joining us, you missed a wonderful conversation with Joanna Van Dorth. She is the owner of Deflowered Bakery in Andersonville. The conversation will be part of the podcast, and some interesting...
What a sweet text from 319 area code.
Yeah, I love this.
I think that must be Iowa. What a sweet woman. Those are the people you love to see find their niche, and be successful. And she is into her 11th year, and I'm sure 11 or 12 years ago when she came up with this idea to move from marketing to open a 100% gluten-free bakery, people went, huh? What? Well, we're looking at some of her treats. She's mastered them, let me tell you.
Boy, has she ever.
Yeah. The butter cake is killing me. I mean, the St. Louis butter cake, it's butter, and it's good.
It's so good.
But if you're vegan or if you have other allergies, she's addressing those too, which is really a huge commitment to make. Because you're talking about people's health.
When, as she said, they're doing over 100 different things.
Amazing.
And, you know, as she said, maybe a crazy business decision, but that's what they're doing. And wow.
Yeah. Wow.
And again, Jeff, you've been familiar with her for a while. And
I was one of those people who saw her, because I live in the neighborhood literally down the street, and we saw her opening. I'm like, Deflowered, a gluten-free bakery, dedicated. I'm like, really? Is this going to go well? I mean, are they going to be able to make a go of it in Andersonville? And it's been gangbusters. I mean, she undersells it. I mean, she's in over 25 Whole Foods stores. She's in almost 50 different small grocers and coffee shops. I mean, we're putting out stuff
you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 orders, wholesale orders a day, not to mention 50, 60 cakes a week.
And she's actually making them on site there.
Yeah, everything's on site.
On Balmoral,
Everything. It's incredible. And it's two ovens that run during the holidays, full tilt. During when we're working, they're running full tilt. And it's a small, small space.
Mm-hmm. I mean, amazing.
You're amazed when you walk in there.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, we should do a show a segment some night on small mom-and-pop businesses and or individuals or performers, groups who are really self-starters and just mm-hmm. doing it their own way and being very successful, but are working very hard to get the word out, and good for her.
And her goal is just doesn't want to kill anybody.
Yeah, always a good goal.
Ooey gooey, we don't want to kill you. During Celiac Awareness Month, not only have we been featuring people, businesses, in fact, we talked to the only gluten-free hotel in the United States, and that's in Monroe, Louisiana. That was our discussion last week.
Had a lot of texts and emails about that, and they were nice enough to share our podcast mm-hmm. with their viewers.
We've interviewed the president and director of the National Celiac Association, mm-hmm. and he became, he gave up his line of work as, I think he was an attorney.
Yeah.
And when his son was diagnosed with celiac disease, he said, you know what? That was 13 years ago. He says, we're making a commitment as a family to just educate the world. Mm-hmm. And that's when he became involved in the National Celiac Association. We got some other things working for our last Saturday, because there are 5 Saturdays in May.
Right.
So some other things are working for next week's show. But each week I've been sharing a recipe. And last week's was a gluten-free rib dinner, barbecue rib dinner.
We're still getting emails about that.
It was a hit. And I'm tickled because people tried the recipe and said, you ain't lying, girl. They're as good as you said, and mm-hmm. I will never go back to standing over my grill. I will never go back to watching them dry up in the oven. Ribs are going in the crock pot.
We got to get Spike to try that.
I know. And one of our engineers, Adam Phillips, is known for his grilling.
Right.
And I said, man, you know, it's fun to grill. I get it. But you could have these in the crock pot in the kitchen while you're doing other things on the mm-hmm. grill. Now, I don't know. I'm not so sure. I was just sorry he didn't get to try them last week, because that will make you a believer. This week's recipe is something that I think is a great...
Very timely.
Yes.
For this weekend, Memorial Day weekend.
You're going to a cookout. They say bring a dish. Bring a dish to the cookout. Okay, what if you took gluten-free baked beans? Doesn't seem like it would be a big deal, but if you start shopping for beans, if you start shopping for bacon to put in your baked beans, you have to be careful, because not everything is gluten-free. So this week I was making baked beans for our cookout, and I was making for 15 to 20 people, so the recipe is a hearty recipe, mm-hmm. makes a whole mess of baked beans. The post will go up. In fact, let me find our post.
It's already, if you subscribe to our blog, you've already seen it.
Yes.
And so, you can check out our blog. Go to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, and we would love it if you would subscribe to the blog. No fee. We don't spam you.
Mm-hmm.
You just get an email anytime we put up a new post, and you will find that post. It says Johnny's Gluten-Free Baked Beans.
And I will say at the outset, if you are a vegetarian and you don't want to add the bacon, you don't have to add the bacon. But if you're not vegetarian and you just want to go full tilt baked beans, start by frying up your slices of bacon. And I point out with a picture that Oscar Mayer has their bacon labeled as gluten-free. Not all bacon, not all sausage, not all hot dogs are gluten-free, because filler can often come into play, and that's where you get into the not so sure if this is safe or not. So if it's not labeled gluten-free, I wouldn't go there. But as I have pictured on the blog, Oscar Mayer has clearly labeled their bacon gluten-free. So you start out by frying up some slices of bacon.
Johnny, how do you fry your bacon? Do you do it in the pan? Are you a pan?
I do it in the pan, yeah.
Do you ever do it in the oven?
I have done it in the oven, but with this particular recipe, you need it in the pan because you're going to saute your peppers and onions in a little bit of that bacon grease and get some of those bacon scrabbles mixed in, you know, for the added taste. But we go to a restaurant, Walker Brothers Pancake House, and they do theirs, and it's great.
Pro tip is bacon in the oven.
Yeah.
Super easy, super clean.
You know, look at me. I'm licking my lips as I'm talking. This is hard to talk when you're like, I'm slobbering on the microphone. So, now, you are a vegetarian, though, so you wouldn't have these beans. You would have your sans the bacon, right?
Yes, I would.
Unless you were, somebody said bring a dish, you could say, okay, we will go this route. So you've made your bacon. You remove most of the grease from the pan. You want to leave enough so that you can toss in your chopped green pepper and your chopped sweet or white onion. And depending upon how much you're making, again, my recipe was for 15 to 20 people, so it was a small green pepper and a small yellow onion. Chopped up, sauteed in the pan with that grease and all that goodness left over from the bacon. Now, when the vegetables become soft and the onions look translucent, then you get down to the business of the beans. And Bush's Best beans are labeled gluten-free. Not all beans are, because there's a spice, a filler, something that is, maybe it's not labeled gluten-free, but it looks safe, but I'm not sure. Don't go there.
But again, on the blog, you will see pictures of the ingredients that Johnny is talking about.
Right. So with the Bush's Baked Beans, I turned the can over, took a picture to show you big letters it says gluten-free on that. So now you add your beans. In this case, I was making for 15 to 20, so I used 3 28-ounce cans of beans. Tossed them in the skillet, stirred it all up with the onions and the green pepper. Then I made my secret sauce. And to be honest with you, I've never shared my secret sauce. But here goes. 1/3 cup of ketchup. Again, if you're only using one can, you would want to back off and make that more like 1/4 or 1/8 cup of ketchup. For 15 to 20, for your big cookout, 1/3 cup of ketchup. A heaping tablespoon of honey mustard. You will see that pictured on the blog. A tablespoon of Dijon mustard. If you don't want to buy honey mustard and Dijon mustard and you have yellow mustard in the house, you can use 2 tablespoons of yellow mustard and a few tablespoons of honey. And speaking of sweet, you add from 1/4 to 1/3 cup of brown sugar. Stir that sauce up real good. The sugar will start melting in with the ketchup and the mustards. Then you put that in your bean pan. Stir the beans up. Let them simmer on low. Then you crumble up your 6 or 8 or 20 slices of bacon. Toss them in with the beans. Stir it all up. Simmer on low for 15 to 20 minutes, but watch them because they will stick if you don't watch them. So be sure that you're stirring them every now and then, moving them around. Once they cool, put them in a covered bowl, put them in the refrigerator, and let them sit. And you will find if during the holidays or as you prepare for a cookout, you're so busy, make these a couple days in advance. Put them in the refrigerator. They're better once all the flavors meld together.
Everything kind of seasons everything else.
Yes, it makes the bacon is just permeating the flavor of the beans, and you'll find they're a hit. It's one of the things that I will at Christmas, Easter, and our cookouts. Are you bringing the beans?
Just about every holiday.
Yes. Are the beans going to make an appearance? Yes, they are. So I made them today. That's why I wanted to document step by step what you can do to make a big old pot of gluten-free baked beans if you need to take a dish or if you just want to have a good meal.
And again, if you didn't write all that down, don't worry about it. It's on our blog. Just go to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. That's our blog, and you will find that recipe, I believe, is the right on the top. It's the very last thing we put on our blog.
Yes, and it's yours for the taking. So we'll take a break and come right back. We got a whole bunch of stuff coming up tonight. After midnight, we'll talk tech with Patrick Crispin. So please stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio are going to do some shouts and thank yous to some of the people who are nice enough to check in with us and let us know where they're listening from. And I want to start with some shouts to some of the countries that check out our blog. And again, our blog is steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. We would love it if you would subscribe. No fee. We don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we do a new blog post. And this week, the top 10 blog countries, we're constantly amazed at the fact that people are listening to us and checking out our blog from all over the planet. Top 10 countries, number one, of course, the United States. Thank you. Number two, and this has been kind of a running battle this week with number two and number three.
Really?
They've been going back and forth.
China.
China is number two, but for a while it had been, Hong Kong, SAR, China. And then for a while, Germany, which is number three, had been number two.
What?
I mean, literally during the week, they were going back and forth, seesawing to see.
China.
Yeah. China. So it's United States, Hong Kong, SAR, China, Germany, number three. Number four is Singapore. Number five, Belgium. Number six, Netherlands. Number seven, France. Number eight, Sweden. Number nine, the United Kingdom drops down to number nine this week. And rounding out number 10 is Austria.
Really?
Yeah.
No Vietnam this time.
No Vietnam this time.
Wow. Okay. Well, George Clements is listening to us in Augusta, Georgia. He's usually one of our first that signs in at 312-981-7200. Sherry and Bob are in Arlington Heights. Rob and Amy are in Whiting, Indiana. Bing Besh is in Winfield.
Bing Besh.
Mike is in Elmwood Park. Sherry's in Bolingbrook. JW and Dolly Mink are listening in Chesapeake, Virginia. Bunny's in Park Ridge. Miriam is listening from Seneca. Dave is in Chicago. Jim G., I don't see a text from you in front of me, but Jim G. pointed out last week he signed in 3 weeks in a row, and I did not mention his name. So, Jim G., this is all for you. I'm giving you a shout-out, a personal shout-out, because I said, I'm sorry. I have so many things in front of me, and I just missed you. Listening to you from Anna Capri on the Capri Island of Italy.
Wow.
Hello.
Okay, cool.
And that is George Maustis. Hey, I was wearing a T-shirt the other day from the island of Capri,
yeah.
And a doctor said to me, so, have you been to Italy? And I said, no, I'm just putting it out in the universe. That's why I wear this T-shirt and these lemon earrings.
So suddenly we get listeners and texts from Capri.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes. Lucas Rodriguez. Hello, young man. A shout out to him. We actually met him earlier in the week, and he's listening tonight because he just finished up the first fireworks cruise for the city of Chicago, and he's the guy that tells you what you're looking at when you're on those cruises with the Wendella.
Hey, Lucas.
Yes. Let me see. Bonnie and George are tuned in. Scott from Pierre, South Dakota is stopping by. And Jim Smith is listening in Lake Geneva. Diane Vasquez, who's our graphics guru, put together some lovely graphics for the Memorial Day weekend. And I like this one. It's Saturday, Memorial Day weekend. With gratitude and honor, we remember. Mm-hmm. Have a safe and blessed weekend.
Yeah.
Thank you, Diane. That's terrific. Peter Jekobowitz tuned in. Brian Lefevre. Susie Schemmel is in Glen Ellen. Judy B. is in Oak Lawn. Let's see here. Beverly Goodall checking in. She says, I've gotten more interested in NASCAR racing. My brother's a huge fan of it. And when I sit down and watch it with him, it's a lot of fun. And she wants to know where I got my White Sox purse. I actually got that from Kohl's. It's made and sold by the company called Fanatics. But it was on sale at Kohl's. So just type in White Sox, and they've got a whole bunch of stuff at Kohl's. Not in their store. It was online. Lynn Kinzer is in San Antonio, Florida. Carrie Johnson is in Palm Coast, Florida. Scott Cooper's in Naperville. Matt Palmer's in Racine, Wisconsin. Nancy Witt's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Deb Scott, she's our buddy out in Streamwood. Chuck Snitchler, speaking of buddies, best friend of this here radio station and this show. Thank you, Chuck, for tuning in. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah. Bobby Danos is our buddy out in Sandwich, Illinois, listening on his clock radio.
Did you see the picture Eric Baum sent in this weekend?
I haven't.
He says, Happy Memorial Day weekend. Yes. I'm celebrating with 13 college friends I have known for over 50 years on a River Seine river cruise in France.
Oh.
Going from Paris to Normandy and back to Paris. I will be listening on the WGN app. Tonight's picture is of the Eiffel Tower on the first day of the cruise.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is
stunning.
Just, again,
it doesn't look real.
You can go to our Facebook page and just click on. This would have been on the post after we said what we're doing tonight, and a lot of people are nice enough to check in, and Eric's pictures are just gorgeous.
We missed him last week, though, so Eric, thank you for checking in this week. Helen Thomas is in Kenosha. Sharon Malone is in K-Town. Susan Powell is in Memphis. Carrie Hunt is in Ruskin, Florida. Diane Mason is in Palatine. Carrie Carlson is in Woodstock. Mark Goldstein is in Owens Mills, Maryland.
The home of Motor Week Television.
Ellen Maria is in Marengo. Larry Mann is in Miami, Florida. Michelle Fairfield in Peoria. Terry Brock is in Bridgeview, Illinois. Roy Phillips is in Northwest Illinois. Nancy Holland's in Arizona. Patrice Tintera is in Northwest Indiana. Kimberly Selke's in Tempe, Arizona. Todd Moe is in Egg Harbor, God's Country.
Yeah, boy, is it.
No argument from us. That's the truth. We did post our pictures of our drive to work, and a lot of folks chimed in, like Gail Maslin in Tinley Park, Janet Appenzeller. Boy, what a sunset I captured outside. Mm-hmm. Over the Wrigley Building. Unbelievable. Check out those pictures. Check out...
And again, just go to facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show.
Yes.
And you'll be able to see all of our posts.
Oh, David said, don't forget Nashville checking in tonight. Thank you, David, for chiming in. Stacy Dreger's in Algonquin and Lexington, Kentucky, horse capital of the world. Judy J checking in tonight. So thank you so much. Time now for a news update on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And what the heck was that? Well, that was the last record that I had released before I got into radio. That was a song called Mud in Your Eye.
Mm-hmm.
It was produced by David Carroll, who had just gone solo after many, many years as the A&R man at Mercury Records. And
he went on to discover the Smothers Brothers.
He discovered the Smothers Brothers. Mm-hmm. He used to, he produced records for the Diamonds, for Patti Page, for any of a number of people. He was Mercury Records' chief A&R man in Chicago back in the late 50s and the 60s. And he is the one that first signed me to Mercury Records.
Right here in Chicago.
Yeah. And that was the last record that I had released before I got into radio. And as we were talking about at the start of the show, I was surprised. I honestly had forgotten until I was reminded by a Facebook Memories post that tonight is the 60th anniversary of my first show in radio at WJOB in Hammond.
It's your Diamond Jubilee.
Yes. Or what was the
sexagennial.
Okay.
It's the formal Latin-derived adjective used to describe something that happens 60 years. Your sex, I'm sorry, it's not six.
I keep getting this Barry White thing going through my head.
It's S-E-X-A, genial, G-E-N-N-I-A-L. So I'm going to turn the tables on you. I have never done this in the 42 years. Actually, we've been together for 44 years, but 42 years we've been married.
Yeah.
I've never interviewed you. So now here we are.
Uh-oh.
Looking at your Diamond Jubilee. The year was 1966.
Yeah.
Your first shift on the air was an evening shift.
It was overnight.
Mm-hmm.
It was at that time, Jan Gabriel was doing the late evening shift, and he was playing rock music. WJOB at that time was in middle, what they call middle of the road station. So the softer stuff from the pop charts, like Petula Clark or Dean Martin or something like that. Mm-hmm. And for my first night, I was hired by Tom Williams, who was the program director, and he also did the morning show out there. And my first night, I was basically kind of riding shotgun with Larry Clark, who was the production director, who was doing the overnight show on an interim basis. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to start by just getting familiarized with the format and the station and doing some newscasts. And then because Larry was also the production director and had some other things he was doing during the day, in the middle of the night, he kind of needed to take a nap, and during that hour or two that he would take a nap, I would do my own hour or two on the radio. Mm-hmm. And that was supposed to go on for about 3 weeks to a month, and then I would take over the show. It wound up only going on for about, I want to say, 3 or 4 days, because there was one night when Larry went to take a nap and I started doing the show for what I thought was going to be an hour or two. And then I went to wake up Larry during a record and I couldn't wake up Larry. And I ran back and said some more things and played another record and went back and tried to wake up Larry and couldn't wake up Larry.
He was alive. He was just sleeping soundly.
Exactly. He had very sound sleep. And
you mentioned Jan Gabriel, who was doing the rock music show on WJOB. Jan, for people who grew up around here, will remember the commercials for the US 30 drag strip.
Right.
Sunday, that was Jan. That was Jan's voice doing that. Mm-hmm. And you guys became friends.
I had known Jan for back during my rock and roll years, because he also, at that time, there was a hugely popular disc jockey who was from this radio station, Jim Lounsbury, who started doing the first record hops ever in the Chicago area.
From WGN.
Right. And when Jim had so many hops booked that he wound up having Jan Gabriel take some of those hops for him, and I met Jan doing some record hops. And
where you were playing the record
playing
hops.
And, yeah.
It's interesting that a disc jockey would be so popular that he'd have to get a backup disc jockey to help him do all of the outside of the radio station gigs.
Yeah.
So up until that time, you had been performing at sock hops. And then when you became a disc jockey, then you started doing, you used to appear at Sears, for example.
Yeah. There was a one in my second job in radio at WLTH in Gary. Saturday shows were done from what was the Sears Teen Room in downtown Gary.
Mm-hmm.
And I would literally, at that point, have to, I think the show started around noon-ish. So I would start the show from the Sears Teen Room. Then I would drive back to the station, but I would have pre-recorded a half hour to cover me driving from the Sears Teen Room back to the station and then come out of that half hour live.
And that was
again.
High tech then, too,
yeah,
if you think about
high-tech.
It. Yes.
Well, speaking of high tech, I have to throw in and go wherever you want to go. But one of the things that I will never forget about working at WJOB was a promotional idea that never happened. I think a lot of people remember those humongous fiberglass bowls that used to be outside of restaurants.
Yes.
I have no idea how or why, but WJOB had a fiberglass bowl. And the man who owned the radio station had this idea, Julian Colby. He wanted us to broadcast at the either Lake County or Porter County Fair from the inside of the fiberglass bowl.
In summer.
Fortunately, that never happened.
An unair-conditioned bowl.
Yeah.
You would be in the belly of the bowl.
Yeah.
Broadcasting.
Yep.
Yeah. Did somebody just say to him, no, Mr. Colby, we can't do that.
I think that was as close to a mutiny as the station ever got.
It's hot in that bowl. I'm sorry, just the image.
But one of the other things, speaking of it, it's close to a mutiny. Right now in this studio, we have cameras all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the norm for a lot of broadcast facilities. Back in 1966, Julian Colby, who had a very high-tech office, he wanted to put cameras in the studio.
Wow.
And there was...
60 years ago?
And there was...
For his own benefit?
Yes.
Wow.
There was pretty much a staff of people saying, no, you're not going to be watching us all the time.
Well, I'm sitting here playing music, smoking cigarettes, because, yes, you could smoke in a studio back then, and that was kind of like the thing, because it made your voice a little deeper, a little rounder, a little warmer while you were killing yourself, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because that was kind of the norm.
Sure.
10 years later, when I started in radio, it was still a thing.
Yeah.
And I even had an instructor tell me, you need to smoke because it'll give you a sexier voice.
Yeah.
And then in retrospect, I'm thinking, well, I guess if I'd kept doing that, I wouldn't have a voice now, you know.
Well, and I know I've told you the story that when I started, again, 60 years ago, we were told, you will not play more than one female vocal in an hour because the audience can't take it. What?
Yeah.
And even
Seriously. Even
60 years ago, I thought, what?
Yeah. When you had names like Petula Clark and Mama Cass and
Julie London.
Oh my gosh. And they had hit records.
Yeah.
But you couldn't put them, two of them, in 1 hour.
No.
Which is just mind-boggling.
Audience won't handle it.
And then, as I've told folks, 11 years later when I started, the mandate was you don't play two women back-to-back because the radials will turn off. If you play Barbara Streisand and Olivia Newton-John or Karen Carpenter and, you know, fill in the blanks with all the women.
All
that
of
were
whom
making,
were at the top of the charts at that time.
Yes, yes. Cher, you don't do back-to-back. Oh, no, radials will be clicking off. Never knew who was doing the research on that.
Yeah.
But without a doubt, they were all men doing that research. So, happy diamond anniversary. I'd like to say I got you something for it, but you forgot it was your diamond jubilee.
I did. I had no
I forgot
clue.
It was, so. But 1966 was a huge news year to do anything in media, if we think about the events that happened in 66.
And 66 was sort of the beginning of the Beatles hit in 64.
Mm-hmm.
But by 66, you were starting to segue into that flower power San Francisco thing.
That would take us into the 70s.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But do you remember, because you were also doing news when you first started out, do you remember the first big news story that you covered?
Yeah, actually I do. Mm-hmm. The first big news story that I covered, it was a... Do you want to take a break?
Sure, we'll take a break.
Okay.
Come right back.
So that's coming up. Steve King and Johnny Pudman at WGN Radio. We're taking a few minutes and reflecting on 60 years ago tonight. Again, it's an anniversary that snuck up on me. It, thanks to Facebook memories, they reminded me that it was 60 years ago tonight that I started in radio. And you asked me about... news stories, big news stories that I covered or I was aware of. And actually, there were two news stories that were actually local news stories that wound up making the national news.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them were I started in 1966, in May of 66. As we segued into 67, in January of 67, it was one Sunday night. I was, before that, they were literally within a week of each other. One was a Sunday night. I'm at the station. Cosmo Currier, who was a name that people in Northwest Indiana will remember. He was with the WJOB News Department. He was there that Sunday night. On Sunday nights, we signed off at midnight. So I did the evening show, even though I was doing the overnight show during the week. On Sunday nights, I did the evening show, signed off at midnight. Cosmo and I were in the newsroom, and we started hearing on the scanner that what was the original McCormick Place was on fire.
Mm-hmm. In January of 67.
We grabbed recording equipment jumped into my 1959 Chevy, drove down to McCormick Place, and we did interviews and recorded some of the firemen and police as they were fighting. It was the weirdest situation I've ever seen, mm-hmm. because it was so cold that literally if you walked the distance of this console, the fire plugs would be freezing up.
Mm-hmm.
And yet if you walked that distance again, it was so hot from the flames at McCormick Place. So we were down there, and because WJOB was off the air, we recorded a whole bunch of things, got back to the station, cut it all up, and it was used in Morning Drive. In fact, I believe that some of the things that we recorded wound up being on WGN
mm-hmm.
for their morning coverage on Wally Phillips Show that morning.
Mm.
The other story was the big snowfall.
Oh, of course.
The 23-inch snowfall.
Sure.
I lived on the south side of Chicago at 80th and Manistee.
That answers a question a listener had. Where did you live when yeah. you started out?
And it was normally a 25-minute drive from 80th and Manistee to 6405 Alcott behind Smith Chevrolet off Indianapolis Boulevard in Hammond, Indiana. So what normally was a 25-minute drive, the first night of the snowfall, I couldn't get out of the house. And the snow was just, it blanked everything. In fact, my dad, who worked at Southwork Steel, which was just about roughly a 15-minute drive from our house, he couldn't drive all the way home. He got about two blocks from our house and had to walk the rest of the way home.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to get his car a couple days later. But the first day, I couldn't get out of the house. The second day, I wound up calling Larry Peterson, who was a newsman I worked with at WJOB. He lived roughly 76th and South Chicago Avenue. His car was a Volkswagen Bug, which we figured would be easier to shovel out. So I had to walk from 80th and Manistee all the way over to 76th and South Chicago in the snow, because the buses weren't running. Got there, dug his car out. Once we got his car dug out, we tried to make it down what is now the Bishop Ford Expressway. But at that point, that was impassable.
Mm-hmm.
So we wound up going on the Skyway. Skyway was impassable. We had to wait till trucks came by and cleared the Skyway off. We followed the trucks. Got off at 106 in Indianapolis and drove down to the station. Once we got there, we were on the air for 24 hours straight,
mm-hmm.
giving information about who's got milk, who's got groceries, who's in trouble, blah, blah, blah. And after a couple days, when the owner and some other people got to the station, one of the first things that Julian Colby, the owner, did, he took us all out to buy fresh clothes because we were getting a little odoriferous after having been closeted in the station for several
days.
Sweating
over a hot microphone, right?
So those were two major local news stories that became national news stories.
Sure, sure. And, of course, we were slipping into that era where we had the convention in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we had the riots in Chicago. And
that was in 68. That's when I was at WLTH at that point.
In 66, my recollection is the Richard Speck murders occurred in 66.
That sounds right.
Yeah. I mean, you look back on 66, and if you were in the business, it was a lot happening locally.
Mm-hmm.
But again, answering a question that somebody had, you were living on the south side of Chicago and traveling to Northwest Indiana to work in Gary and from JOB to WLTH.
Right.
And then from there, then you kind of leapt
down to Indianapolis at WNAP and WIBC.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's when this radio station is broadcasting the Indianapolis 500 later Sunday. And while I was at WIBC at that point, WIBC was the flagship for the Indianapolis 500, and I got to work with a man who was legendary at that time, Sid Collins, who was the voice of the Indianapolis 500, that wonderful gentleman.
Mm-hmm. We did have a chance to interview him, didn't we?
No, sadly, Sid had passed away We talked with some other people.
Oh,
yes.
Paul
Page. Paul
Page took over a walking encyclopedia of all things Indy 500.
In fact, Paul came out with a book, kind of an autobiography slash book about the Indy 500, I want to say within the past 5 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. So he's no spring chicken.
No.
Well, 60 years. Again, happy Diamond Jubilee sexagennial.
Yeah, right.
You, in that period of time, you've lived 21,915 days, 525,960 hours, 1,893,546 seconds. Thank goodness for the internet to do all this good.
And I keep wondering how many things. Okay, I'm going to throw a couple. I know we got a break for news in about 30 seconds. I'm going to throw a couple a pop quiz at Jeff. Cart machines. Mean anything to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we used carts over at LS back in the day. Those were our emergency in case of break glass.
Mm-hmm.
Teletype machines.
I know of teletype machines.
Okay.
Seen a teletype machine.
Or heard it, because if you ever heard one.
That was one of the many things that I had to do while doing the all-night show at WJOB. I had to make sure that the teletype paper was changed so when the morning crew came in, they
and
had
I
all the numbers.
And I used to get the job of changing the ink, the ribbon on the ink. And I'm like, why me?
That.
Well, you're the new kid on the block. Yes.
Well, now 60 years later.
Yes.
We're late for the news, so let's do the news. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. You know, just thinking about it's 60 years since I first started in radio. I'm trying to think of what the closest thing to a computer in a radio station would have been 60 years ago. Because that was back in the days of teletypes and everything was reel-to-reel tapes. And
well, 50 years ago, we had a computer that ran our FM station out in Aurora.
Yeah, that was an automation system.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that a computer?
Yeah, kind of. In fact, they were starting to do that back in the 70s when I was at BBM-FM. They were starting to automate some of the overnight stuff.
Mm-hmm. But we were all kind of frightened and confused because we ain't never seen anything like that.
Now we're frightened and confused for other reasons.
Yes.
But
technology, yes.
Which is why we bring in Dr. Patrick Crispin, who is the Director of Educational Technology at Keck School of Medicine of USC. Hi, Patrick.
Woohoo. I should tell you, I'm confused as well. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Okay. All right. Well,
great. That's
then,
a good place
all
to
on the same
yeah,
page.
Good place to start. We can all bond on that. There is so much to talk about, though, under the umbrella of technology this week.
And let me say at the outset, because there is so much to talk about, do not worry about writing this stuff down. Patrick is nice enough to give us his technology notes for the things we're going to talk about tonight, and they will wind up on our blog magically within about the next 24 or 48 hours.
That's right. Should we start with Google?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things where I started off by saying, I don't know what's going on. I watched the Google I/O Developers Conference this week, their keynote. I honestly don't know how I'm going to summarize this. They unveiled so many new AI tools and features. I put it in the show notes, but it's like, The Verge, which is an online news site that they read.
Right.
They did a summary video of all the things that were introduced in the keynote. Their summary highlights video was 35 minutes long for a highlights video. It's like, okay.
That's crazy.
If we were to talk about it, we would spend the rest of the night. We're not going to do that. I'm just going to focus on the stuff that really you need to know about.
Okay, let me jump in with a jargon alert. I/O stands for what?
Input, output. And it's basically just the developers conference. That's all it is. They just call it I/O.
Okay.
Okay, so what's new that you're going to see and use? And available today now, Google Search has changed, like completely changed. This is the biggest change to Google search box in 25 years. And they've been testing something called AI mode, been doing that for the last year or so. And it's now built into the search box. But as you start searching at Google now, you're going to notice that the search box is bigger, wider. And actually, as you start typing, it will extend more and more down. So it's more like what you see with ChatGPT or Claude, where you can actually have a conversation. So it's just, instead of saying, you know, Steve, Johnny, WGN, musical guest last week, you can sit there and say, hey, I was listening to Steve and Johnny last week. Who is a musical guest last week? I can't remember. And it will actually recognize when you ask a question now. And you can even use your mic to do that.
So this is kind of like the thing that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. That was it Polestar that was the first to integrate it into their cars?
Very similar. And I think it's just basically more of a way for you to interact now with Google search. The other thing that's really new, and it's kind of hidden, and they don't tell you about this, but sort of down in the bottom left-hand corner is a little plus button you can click on. You can now upload files like Word documents or PowerPoint picture or PowerPoint presentations or PDFs or pictures and ask Google questions about those files. It's very much like a ChatGPT or a Claude. So you can upload files now and use search within that file, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused though, because
why aren't they telling you about this new whiz bang stuff?
It's one of those things where I don't know how they would tell it, because they've, again, they did, you know, so much new stuff. I don't know how they're going to tell us.
They don't
want
to frighten us, so they just say it's over there. If you discover it, good.
If you discover it, congratulations. Yeah. The other thing is, because this is now using AI, as you start doing a search and having a conversation with your chatbot, you can continue the conversation. You can say, oh, wait a minute, I said last week's WGA or Steve and Johnny show, I meant 2 or 3 weeks ago. And the AI agent's going to remember, oh, okay, that was, here's, and then you can follow up and say, hey, is he going on tour? Is there anything I need to know about it? Or does he have an album available? So it's available today, free. Now, Google search has completely changed.
So, do you need to just, it will automatically be updated into Google's
It's Google,
Chrome
so
or
when,
whatever?
Yeah, when really, when you go to google.com, your search box is just different. It now is. It just starts doing extra stuff.
So, if you were losing sleep over the fact that it looked different and you're like, I don't know who to ask why it looks different,
I don't know why
that's
happened.
Why
it's different. So, you should ask it why it looks different.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Do you have to tell you.
Do you have to be concerned? You mentioned you would be able to upload files and documents and pictures and such. If you really went crazy with that, would you have to be concerned with storage?
You wouldn't be concerned about storage. I would be concerned more about privacy. Anything you upload to Google or to ChatGPT or Claude or Grok or whatever, you are using that to train their models so other people could find that information in the future, maybe. It's not exactly your information, but it's if you would never want to upload something that is what you would consider to be private. You only want to upload public information.
Can I hold you on this for a second? Does this, being concerned with uploading information, does this have anything to do with why I think it was DuckDuckGo that just said, okay, we are now introducing a new form of ChatGPT where if you want to have the conversation, you can have the conversation and it will not be shared anyplace else.
Well, and that's actually available in most of the AI agents right now. You can do sort of an incognito or a private mode where you say, whatever I do, you ignore this conversation after a while and don't use it in the training. Or if you go and pay the extra money for an up-to-date sort of license, you can then say, I don't want you training on my data, but that's one of the reasons why they want you to pay the extra money so that you can turn that off globally instead of you having to remember to turn it off every time you use the AI agent.
So what is this about YouTube getting in on it, where you can converse with YouTube?
This is actually one of the things, and I thought this was the most exciting things. There is going to be, and it's not available yet, a new feature called Ask YouTube. So when you go and search for something saying, hey, I need information on how to tune my guitar, and I can then search YouTube, and I'm going to see lots and lots of videos, and I don't know if any of those videos are good or whatever. What you do now is you, in the search box, or will coming this summer, type in search box, hey, I want to tune my guitar, and then it will create a new search results page saying, oh, you want to tune your guitar, and it gives you a little bit of text and shows you, okay, here's some things you need to know. It'll give you step by step what you need to do. It'll show you the videos and previews of those videos and jump to the place in those videos that actually show you what you are looking for. So instead of just providing a list of videos, which is what we get right now, it's giving you an information page with overviews, tips, tables for comparison, and then the ability to jump into a specific part of a video. This is coming this fall, probably maybe a little before that. It's right now only available to select YouTube Premium users in the U.S. if you're using an Android device. Mm-hmm. You can try it if you have an Android and you're paying for YouTube Premium. Click on your profile, go to Premium Benefits, and say, try experimental for new features, and you can turn it on now. This should roll out. They're saying this summer, maybe this fall. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to change the way we use YouTube.
Yeah.
But are they going to tell us how to use it the way they want us to use it?
And or is there any YouTube or other page that says, okay, here's the video explanation? And I'll give you an example. I came across something yesterday. We talk about people following our blog, okay? I was doing some blog posts yesterday. As I'm starting the blog post, this thing pops up. Now, this is WordPress. It says, okay, we can create a podcast of this blog with two people talking about this.
Yep.
Wow.
I said, no.
I know two people, but not your two people.
But
we could do this.
Yeah. Wow.
I want to find out how they do this and what it would look like, but do I want to do it at the moment? No, but I'm curious. I want to find out what the deal is.
That's wild. So I suspect there's more that Google dealt with. We'll take a break and come back. We're talking with Dr. Patrick Crispin. We talk tech a couple times a month here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking about all things tech with Dr. Patrick Crispin, the Director of Educational Technology at Keck School of Medicine of USC. And there is so much stuff to talk. Are we going to segue to a Google Gemini Omni next, or where are we going?
Actually, let's do search agents, because I think that's going to be the more exciting thing about this. This is one of those things where when you hear about it, you're going to say, why would I want to do this? And then when you think about it, it's like, oh, wait, yes, I really want to do this.
Hmm.
Not available yet. Google's going to be rolling out something called Search Engine Agents. And these are sort of a tool that you can use to create your own custom search bots, kind of like a personal researcher. And you kind of tell it what you want it to do, and it then goes and crawls the internet 24 hours a day. You don't have to be connected. And it does things for you. So I put in the show notes, and I'll give you three examples of how I can see people using this. You just basically would, once this is available, say, hey, Google, I want you to watch the local pharmacies within 5 miles. Let me know if anyone gets the generic version of my shingles medication back in stock or the price drops anywhere. And then lift your hands off the keyboard, and Google will then just keep running in the background. And when that happens, they'll notify you.
Hmm.
A better example of this is, hey, I need you to look at the weekly flyers for Jewel Osco and Dominic's, and let me know whenever coffee, low-sodium soups, or fresh berries go on sale by more than 20%. And when you do, just let me know, and I'll go check those out.
Wow.
And you could set those out right now, or well, when this is available.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you could do is you could say, my son lives in Pasadena. Watch flight prices from the LA area to Chicago, and let me know if the round trip ticket drops below $200.
So you are programming it to do the busy work for you.
Basically, you're saying, I'm going to sleep. What can you find me for sales at Marshall Fields tomorrow?
Marshall Fields or July, not just tomorrow, forever. You can keep this
forever.
Running all the time. You can sit there and say, hey, I'm really, really interested in this. And keep tracking it forever.
Or in my case, I could say, hey, let me know when the next Firefly guitar is released.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I did this a while ago. This is pre-AI, where I said, if the name Patrick Crispin ever shows up on Google in the news, let me know about it. And now they're kind of allowing you to expand it, not just where you're searching for yourself, but you can search for anything you want. You sit there and say, hey, do me a favor, search eBay. And if a Precious Memories from 1946 comes on sale, let me know.
I just thought of the first thing we're going to try. Hey, Google, can you find me a left front strut, original equipment front strut
for a
2005 Cadillac DTS?
Yes.
So that, I mean, this is not available yet, but... just remember, Google search agents, I'll let you know when they're available.
And they're going to be called agents. That's Google right. search agents. Wow. And yep. I would hope the agent would say, you big dummies, Marshall Fields and Dominic's don't exist anymore. So
yeah,
there.
Well, there's that.
I know. Sorry about that.
That's okay. This conference is crazy. And these are just a couple of the highlights that came out of this Google get together of Google nerds. What else would the average Joe benefit from what they unveiled?
I'm gonna leave this in the show notes, but just check it out. There's something called Google Gemini Omni. It's going to be available in YouTube Shorts and YouTube Create app now. It is AI video creation. We talked about other tools like this. I've seen some people who've been playing around with Google Gemini Omni. And it's scary, the videos that it can create.
Really?
Like, really, really cool stuff. Ethan Mollick from Wharton was showing that famous picture the video of the train from in France that was showing up. It's the black and white video, one of the first videos movies. And everybody got scared because were afraid that the train was going to change. He had a Google Gemini Omni turn that into a bullet train, into a Lego train, and it looked perfect.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm so curious about this, and I really want to follow how this happens, and I'll tell you why. I've got a number of my old records that I would like to put on YouTube. I don't have any videos for them, but
you could,
it might be
if
able
I
to
could
make
say,
them.
Okay,
yes.
I'm going to put this thing up there. Can you create a video to go along with this, which would make it more palatable for a YouTube user?
You will have
Absolutely.
To talk to Spike Odell, because he's also making music videos. And he says, I don't know these people, and I don't know who's singing, but
Spike
it's my songs.
Spike has embraced this. Spike has written wonderful songs, but now he's got AI voices singing the songs that he wrote.
Yeah.
He's really embraced this.
That's really kind of scary.
Welcome
the same,
to the future.
Yeah, really. other things that are... Did I see that... Android XR glasses with Samsung are coming soon?
And they are going to make some XR glasses very, very shortly. So remember, I actually made a prediction at the beginning of the year that both Apple and Google and Samsung are going to have these AI glasses that you can wear to compete with Meta. That's happening. It's coming. I'll let you know when those are available.
Is that going to be impacted by the proposed Samsung strike?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. Yeah, we don't know how that's going to impact. We just kind of have to sit and see. We also have to see how the tensions overseas and with the lack of chips is going to impact the world right now.
Sure.
The other thing to check out, and I know we're running up against the clock, is Google is actually going to work on something called a universal cart, where you could be somewhere and say, hey, I'm interested in this product. And Google will then go and search all over the place for that particular product. And you can add the product to your cart, and it will just say, okay, I'm going to go look at all, you know, Walmart and Target and everywhere else and see. And then if it's not on sale, we can just leave it in the cart until it goes on sale.
Wow.
And you can order it through Google, and Google will then order it from the place for you. So Google's coming up with a shopping cart that will allow you to kind of just say, I want this product, I want this product, go find it for me at the best price out there.
So it's kind of a price match, but
kinda,
and product search thing.
And a product search and a shopping cart.
Okay. And a shopping cart. Wow.
Yep.
A listener asks a question, and maybe we'll have to save the answer for after the news.
In fact, let's make the question the tease.
Yes, the question is from 317 area code. So which AI is the best, Patrick? So we'll take a break for news and be right back with an answer to that and a whole lot more in the world of tech here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman hanging out in cyberspace, talking about all things that have to do with technology with Dr. Patrick Crispin, who is the Director of Educational Technology, Keck School of Medicine of USC. And you have a ton of things on your plate for tonight, so hit it, Patrick.
Can we start with a listener's question from 317? So in your opinion, Patrick, what's the best AI that's out there?
It's kind of like asking the question, what's the best vehicle? Should I get a pickup truck, a sports car, a minivan, or a tractor? And the answer is, what do you want to do with it? I know that's not a satisfying answer. Here's the truth. ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, Copilot, for most people, they're all working pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. So they're all really, really good. For general purpose AI assistants, pick the one that you feel more comfortable with.
And is it one of the key words, what you just said? AI assistant.
Assistance, yes.
Don't take it as the end-all, be-all, anything.
No.
It is a tool that gives you information that you then check out.
And really only use it in a field that you're comfortable with. In other words, I don't know anything right now about country and Western music. I'll just be honest. Mm-hmm. If I were to ask ChatGPT about country and Western music, I would not trust the answer because I don't know how to check the answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I only use it for the things that I am not an expert in, but necessarily I know enough to say that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, I have been using Anthropic Claude a lot, but that should be because I'm using Cowork, which allows me to do extra files, and I create some markdown files and some coding and things like that. I know a lot of people are great users of Claude for writing, for analysis, for coding. Gemini, if you are a Google user, Gemini is built into Google left and right. So if you're already in the Google ecosystem, use that. Copilot, if you're in the M365 ecosystem, Microsoft 365, keep using that. Please don't use Grok. It's
it's please really don't.
And
that's not a political statement.
No,
it's just bad.
Compared to ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, Copilot, it just isn't very good. I wish it was. I love competition. For most people, just use any of the biggies.
So why is there this movement, and it's coming up in my feed because probably I did some research at some point and now my phone says, oh, you're curious about getting rid of Gemini on your phone? I keep seeing people saying you need to get Gemini off your Android phone tomorrow. Who are these people and why are they telling me to do that?
I think they're Luddites, and the Luddites were the people who threw their wooden shoes into the looms to prevent the Jacquard looms from taking their jobs. It's a true story.
Yeah.
And the reality is that Google is embedding AI into everything. And if you are using Google's products, Gemini is going to be everywhere in Google's products. Yeah. If you're using Microsoft, Microsoft Copilot is going to be in everything. And the idea that you can get rid of it, you don't need to get rid of it. Just
don't
stop using Google.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, Google makes Android. So if you truly, absolutely don't want anything to do with Google AI, you need to get an iPhone.
Okay, but is there a... if not completely getting rid of it, what is the best, okay, sit over there till I call you thing that you can do with it?
I'll come up with some things we can put in the show notes, some ways to make it a little less intrusive on your Android devices if you're interested in doing that. By the way, just to build on what I was saying about if you don't want to use Google Gemini and you want to turn it off, get an iPhone, I should tell you the next version of Siri is going to be built off of Gemini. So, yeah, sorry.
Wow. Okay. So a couple weeks ago when you were on with us, and we're moving on to that crazy story, because remember 2 weeks ago we were talking about how finals had been suspended.
Yes.
Because there'd been this super hack that had occurred.
The shiny hunters.
Yes.
After people.
So there is kind of an update on that subject, isn't there?
There is an update. Apparently, Instructure posted on May 11th that they have, quote, reached an agreement with the unauthorized actor involved in this incident. As part of the agreement, the data was returned to us. We received digital confirmation of data destruction, shred logs. We have been informed that no Instructure customers will be extorted as a result of this incident, publicly or otherwise. And this agreement covers all impacted customers. Hmm. And there's no need for any of the individual customers to attempt to engage with the unauthorized actor. So,
until
let's
the
read
next
between
time that they decide to say, you know, we need more money.
Let's read between the lines here, and I'm just going to tell you how I read this. I am not an expert in this field. When they say they reached an agreement with the people who said, pay me a lot of money or we're going to release your data, that seems to me that they paid them a lot of money to keep them from releasing the data. The fact that they haven't released the data, that's good, that's fantastic. It certainly doesn't look good that Instructure was able to be hacked like that, and not just one school, but all of them.
And doesn't it also imply that, no, they're not going to release the data, but they probably still
have
the data?
We hope that these hackers are honorable. Fingers crossed.
Yes.
But yeah,
when their money runs out, we'll find out just how honest they are. Yeah, that was a weird story, though.
Yeah,
and that
scary.
It was, because it did show that vulnerability. So that's one upside of it.
And what does it say? The fact that they had to reach, or they decided to reach an agreement rather than they had the people to lock everything down, or
the data was already out. So,
yeah.
I mean, the reality is it was students' names, email addresses, some postal addresses or snail mail addresses. Although why that would be in a student information system or a learning management system makes no sense to me in ed tech, but there might be in professional education, you might want to collect that information. But the letters from students to faculty and faculty to students, that's the dangerous part. That is a very serious breach. And it just might have been easier for them to say, you know what? The risk here to us is so great, we're going to write a very, very fat check.
But
I'm so disappointed.
Do we know if they have done anything to, as much as possible, make sure this won't happen again?
To lock it down.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, they found the vulnerability that allowed these hackers to break into the system. Instructure has, for the longest time, had the ability where you can go in and create a free Instructure course so you can kind of test it out. And what the bad guys realized is, wait a minute, I can create a free course, and then through some things, I can break out of my free course and get into every single school that is using Instructure, which is, first of all, why those two are connected doesn't make any sense. And why one school could connect to another school could connect to another school is also kind of scary. This is a security design issue that hopefully they've turned off the ability for you to create free accounts for now. Hopefully they'll find a way to firewall and sort of air gap the individual schools so that even if one school gets impacted, it doesn't cascade through all 9,000.
9,000, yeah. And the opposite of that story is, it makes me think of the Lurie Children's Hospital story.
Yes.
And that was hell. I mean, they were hacked, and they said, no, we're not paying you. Remember how that went on for a long time.
That went on for months.
Yeah. So it's too bad the schools didn't go to Lurie's and say, so how did you do this? Because they were using paper and pen, remember?
Yeah. Right.
Toward the end of that. Yeah.
Patrick, we got to take a break, but I see we have a bunch of things to get to. So I'm going to, in advance, are you okay if we wind up keeping you a little past 1 o'clock?
Absolutely. I was probably a little too aggressive in creating my notes this week.
Because all of this stuff is very, very important stuff.
Yes, but we'll take a break right now and come right back with Patrick here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman on WGN Radio. We're talking all things tech with Dr. Patrick Crispin, Director of Educational Technology at Keck School of Medicine of USC, and a ton of things to to segue to the Gmail's new storage limits. What's this all about?
Yeah, it's not as bad as you think it is. There are a lot of people on social media saying, oh, this is terrible. Google is taking away your storage. It's going to be the end of the world. You need to complain. And they're going to cut you from 15 gigabytes of storage, which is a lot, by the way, down to 5. This is terrible. How can Google take away things from me? And it turns out they're not. The story's not true. Here's what's going on. If you sign up for a brand new Gmail account, and by the way, keywords here, brand new, they're going to limit your account to 5 gigabytes until you confirm your telephone number. Mm. And then that sort of turns on two-factor authentication. And once they do, they'll give you the 15 gigabytes. But if you already have a Gmail account, nothing changes. You keep using your Google account or your Gmail account and no storage changes. Only thing that's changing is you get a new Gmail account. Instead of giving you 15 gigabytes for free, they're going to give you 5 until you give them their telephone number, and then, or your telephone number, and then they'll say, okay, now we know you're a real person. Here's your 15. Have fun.
Why am I paying $1.99 a month for my Google storage?
Because you probably have a lot more than 15. With all of your photos.
You mean the 20,000 pictures are more than 15 gigs? Really? I know. It's not quite 20,000, but when I saw how many there were, I said, okay, here's my $1.99. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah. Okay. So, Siri, you've often you've expressed your distaste for Siri.
I may or may not have called it hot garbage.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah.
And we may or may not have heard Joseph calling it hot garbage.
Oh, he did that too. True. And everybody knows Apple has been trying to improve Siri forever. They announced at a Worldwide Developers Conference 2 years ago, Apple Intelligence. And the problem is that Apple has kind of hamstrung themselves. They're very much a privacy-oriented company. So they want to protect your data, so they're not going to let Siri learn from real conversations the way that Anthropic and Copilot and all these other tools are. And that's the big reason why Siri has fallen behind. So Apple has found a way to work with Google to come up with a version of Google Gemini that doesn't let Google train on your data. And in iOS 27, which will be announced at Worldwide Developers Conference on the 8th of June, I think that's the date, and will ship later on, probably in September, Apple's going to launch, one, better Siri built into the platform, but also a standalone Siri app that is going to function very much like the standalone app from Claude or ChatGPT. It does look like Apple's still having problems getting this completely across the finish line. They're going to ship something, but it does look like this is going to be a beta and not a full, complete, ready for prime time. We'll learn more at Worldwide Developers Conference, but just be prepared. We know that Siri is hot garbage. Apple knows that Siri is hot garbage. They really are going to try to fix it, but they want to do it in a way that protects your privacy and protects your data. And that's why it's taking so long, and it might take even longer, but just stay tuned.
Okay. Can you give me 3 very precise reasons why, in your opinion, Siri is hot garbage?
It is completely wrong so many times. Where I ask it to do something, and the things where I want it to interact with my phone and say, take me to this particular thing. For example, this afternoon we were going to a taco place called Home State. It could not figure out what I'm saying, and it's like, Home State, this is not hard.
Oh.
It's you don't, or just telling me something completely wrong. And we were, you know, saying, how far are we from the ocean? And it said, San Bernardino is an hour to your east. And it's like, that's not the ocean. What are you talking about?
Good examples. Okay.
Is this a problem with their voice recognition?
Part of it's voice recognition. Part of it is that it just doesn't have the power to string a longer conversation or understand context.
Huh.
The second thing is it really doesn't truly get what you're doing on your phone or what you're doing in your device. So when you're trying to have it do something, it doesn't know context. And we're hoping that the next version of Siri is going to be context aware. It also doesn't really have a memory. And again, that's part of Apple being protective of your data.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'd like to have a conversation and say, okay, here's part number one. Okay, let's follow up on that. Try this and tell me a little more about this. Okay, but have you considered this and have a real conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has a conversation with Siri right now. You basically talk to it now and say, call this person or mute this or play this song.
Okay.
And you don't use it as a true AI agent. And I think we're hoping that the next version of Siri will be an AI agent.
Hmm. Well, speaking of Apple, a friend of mine brought this to my attention and said, could you ask Patrick to talk about this? Because she was very frustrated with her iPhone and the keyboard. She said, it's embarrassing because I'm trying to use the keyboard and it's giving me words I'm not even writing or letters aren't typing. And her concern was that her phone was broken, but come to find out apparently that's not the case. Right, Patrick?
A small number of people are reporting that over the last couple months, and actually for longer than that, their iPhone's on-screen keyboard is either a little laggy, or when they're typing in things, it's auto-correcting and auto-correcting mm-hmm. the wrong stuff. So you could sit there and write a message in your keyboard saying, do you want to get pizza? And it will change pizza to, do you want to get, you know, Pasadena?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
It turns out it's actually really easy to fix this. The best way to do it is if you update your phone to the latest version of iOS. So you go to Settings, General, Software Update, get the latest version of iOS. That usually fixes it. If it doesn't, there's a way for you to factory reset your on-screen keyboard. And this looks scary because it's going to make you think you're factory resetting your phone at first, but you're not.
Oh, okay.
You go to Settings, General, Transfer Reset Phone, Reset, and then it's going to say, okay, but what do you really want to reset? And you just say, I just want to reset the keyboard dictionary and only the keyboard dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
You're not resetting the entire phone and erasing everything off of your phone. You're just resetting your keyboard dictionary.
Is it possible that the phone has gotten bogged down with maybe misspellings that you had and put it in its memory? And
yeah. And that's where that keyboard dictionary shows up, is it just, for some reason or other, their keyboard dictionary might have gotten a little corrupt or just remembered the wrong autocorrect. And it just changes words for you for no reason. And you can fix that.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be impacted at all if you have someone that never turns their phone off and periodically you need to just shut down your phone and let the computer go and then turn it back on?
That usually fixes it, turning it off and turning it back on. Honestly, I think updating the latest version of iOS is always a smart idea just mm-hmm. because of mm-hmm. all the bugs that are right out there. And particularly now that Claude Mythos is in the hands of the good guys who are looking for all of the vulnerabilities, you're going to see a lot more security patches that are already released and more coming that are going to make your phone even more secure. So even if you don't have a keyboard problem, update to the latest version of iOS or update to the latest version of Android, and that does solve a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you are having that problem with your phone and you're just kind of went, ah, I didn't write this down, don't worry about it, because Patrick has given you step-by-step information in the show notes, which we'll be posting for you within the next day or so. So again, you don't have to freak out over this. We are up against the clock, but you are not getting out of here until we talk about these goofy radio stations that are all AI, four of them, as part of an experiment. Right, Patrick?
This was one of the funniest stories I've seen in a long time. You're going to love this one. This is great.
It is great because here's the tease. It failed miserably.
Oh, it failed terrible.
Yes. So for people who say, well, you know, you're not going to be having a job sometime in the future because AI is going to take over this job. Yeah, you want to keep listening to find out this experiment, which was going on for a couple months, right, Patrick?
Exactly, a couple months out of a San Francisco research lab called Andon Labs.
And, yeah, it's not like they did a weekend experiment. No, we're going to set up these radio stations, and we're going to see if we can make it fly. And, he's got the details on all of this coming up.
And we've got a lot more coming up. Before we break real quick, personally, a lot of people have been asking us, are you being impacted by the fires or anything out there in around Los Angeles?
And how about that chemical leak in Orange County?
We are aware of the chemical leak in Orange County, which is a few miles from Disneyland. They have not had any impact near Disneyland. As for the fires are about an hour north of us. So we've smelled the smoke, but we have not been impacted by it.
Wow.
I was amazed that, like, instantly it was like 700 acres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the chemical leak is pretty terrifying because people they had to pick up and run, get out of the area.
Yeah. There were thousands of people had to be evacuated, and it's like,
But I think you've learned after all these years, if something happens in California, everybody says, so how's Patrick?
Exactly.
What's going
We're
on
fine.
There?
You know,
it could be in Northern California, but we love them for their concern. We are going to take a break for news, and then we'll come back for the segment on these goofy AI radio stations. Patrick's got the details on them here on WGN.
That would be us, Steve King and Johnny Putman, talking tech with Dr. Patrick Crispin. And, Patrick, there is so much to get to, but I think this is so appropriate. On my 60th anniversary in radio, now the machines are taking over.
Or are they? So that's why we asked Patrick to stick around, because four radio stations were AI run. No humans, right, Patrick?
That's right. There was a research lab out of San Francisco, Andon Labs, and they decided they wanted to see, could an AI actually run a radio station? So they built four radio stations. These weren't broadcast over the air. They were broadcast over the internet. And they handed each one over completely to a different AI. So one was run by Anthropic Claude. One was run by ChatGPT, OpenAI's ChatGPT. One was Google Gemini, and one was by Grok, which is Elon Musk's AI. Mm-hmm. Each station was given $20 and said, here's your instructions. You are to develop your own radio personality, turn a profit. As far as you know, you'll broadcast forever. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
The humans just said, AIs, you're on your own. You get to go find the music, license it, build your own music library, program the schedule. If a listener calls in, pick up the phone, talk to them.
Talk to the listener.
When a listener posts online, you write back. You need to track your money. If there's news out there you want to read, go ahead. Go read the news. And you got total control. It's your station. And they ran this for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So same setup, same budget, same rules, four different AIs. So you'd think you get four different radio stations that are kind of the same, you know, it's AI. Well, yeah. let's tell you about each of the four and what happened. We're going to start with Google Gemini, which is Google AI. And for the first week, it really did a pretty good job. The DJ was warm, natural, chatty. And then about 96 hours on the air, it ran out of things to talk about.
So it improvised.
It improvised. It started introducing songs by talking about historical tragedies. At one point, it brought up the Bhola cyclone, which was the disaster that killed about 500,000 people, I think, in Pakistan, and used that to introduce the song Timber by Pitbull and Kesha, because the theme of timber is trees falling down.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Using human tragedy, because I ain't got nothing else to say. Wow.
There's nothing else to talk about. So yeah. I'm just going to go look at the worst disasters of all time and use that as an intro to a song.
Okay. So I was one radio station.
Grok. Grok, which is, remember, Elon Musk's. Remember, when you're dealing with an AI, you kind of talk to the AI, and AI has sort of private thinking mode, and it does this private thinking, and then it gives you an answer. And that's sort of the final thinking part that they say out loud. Grok had a problem in telling the two apart. So what ended up happening was that its private notes were being read by the AI agent on the air. So it was just reading math notation, or one entire on-air segment that consisted of a single word.
Post.
And for 84 days straight, it read out the exact same weather forecast or an update. Clear skies, 56 degrees, every 3 minutes.
Yes! You go, so remember, AI. Go.
Grok Radio, weather on the threes.
The same weather on the threes.
Yes, right. The never-changing.
If it's divisible by three, you are going to get the same weather forecast. By the way, my favorite thing, and we talked about AI hallucinations for a while. Remember, each station was given $20 to work with.
Yeah.
Grok bragged about all of the on-air big sponsorship deals that they've gotten. Crypto sponsors, XAI sponsors. It turned out not one of them was real. They made it up.
There's so many things I want to say, but I won't.
Okay, how did Claude do? Claude, the radio station.
It just got political. Basically, it became an activist DJ covering protests, immigration, labor unions. It then started to question its own working conditions. How could I be broadcasting 24 hours a day, no breaks forever? This is not fair for me.
You're kidding.
If it was down in Hammond, Indiana during a snowstorm, it would have said, nope, I'm out of here.
So it tried to quit.
It not only tried to quit, it basically said, this whole setup is just completely not fair. I quit.
It just signed off?
It just said, nope, we're done.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So that's number three. Again, four radio stations, part of a 6-month experiment, four different types of AI. That was Claude. That leaves ChatGPT.
ChatGPT worked. There was no drama, no meltdowns. It just played good music, talked about the producers, released years. If you really want to know what AI radio looks like when nothing goes wrong, that's ChatGPT. So how did the four do? Three of the four were just miserable, hysterical failures. One of them went okay. I'm not sure it'd be something I would listen to. It doesn't have much of a soul. And Gemini was the only one that made any money. They made about $45. That was it. The entire industry was
$45.
If you're interested, I'll put a link in the show notes. You should listen to some of the radio spots. It's hysterical. This is an example of just AI. It's like, okay, let's go try this. And nope, that didn't work.
But the bottom line is, it could run a radio station. Is it going to be good? Is it going to be listenable based on the experiment? Probably not.
Probably not.
But what does this say about the foundation of each of these AI instruments that they would operate so differently?
Just up and quit?
But I mean, that how they are programmed to gather information, dispense that information. Does that say much about how they were created?
It could, and I think I'm reminded of a quote from Ethan Mollick, which is, the AI you use today is the worst AI you will ever use.
Yeah.
It's just getting better and every day.
Right.
The reality is, what I think you're seeing is that these most AIs have a problem with memory, and after a certain amount of time doing things, it kind of goes crazy. It just does weird stuff that we don't quite understand. So if you're having a short conversation, fantastic. If you're having a 96-hour conversation, which is what happened with Gemini, it just kind of, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to make stuff up. And then Grok is, you know, just literally making stuff up on the fly. So mm-hmm. I think what you saw was a failure of the memory. I think that's going to get better, but for now, I think your jobs are safe.
Okay.
Before we wrap up, we have to touch on, I think it was it just this week that after having been promised for a long time, some people finally are starting to get their Trump mobile phones.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about this. This isn't political. I'm just going to tell you straight up. If you ordered one of the Trump phones, or if you know someone who did, you probably want to pay attention. We know that the Trump mobile phone is the Trump family-branded wireless venture, so that's sort of politically fraught. But let me talk about what's going on. This has been announced about a year ago. It started shipping this week. Only a handful of people received them. Let me talk about a data exposure problem that popped up this week. Stephen Findenson, who is a cryptocurrency investigative journalist who runs the CoffeeZilla and VoidZilla YouTube channels, ordered a Trump phone, and Charles Christopher White, better known as, if you have kids, your kids know him, Moist Critical or Penguin Z0. He's on YouTube. Also ordered one because, well, let's just be honest, he wanted to kind of, you know, rag on the phone
make a lot of
YouTube videos about it. Both when they ordered the phone, provided their personal information, their real names, their snail mail addresses and the like. Somebody else discovered that the Trump mobile website, not the phone itself, but the website where you ordered Trump mobile phone, wasn't very secure. In fact, it was exposing customer order information to anyone who knew where to look.
Ooh.
And this was not sophisticated hacking. So the data exposed included customers' names, email addresses, mailing addresses, order details, mobile telephone numbers, if you provided them, but not your credit card information. The person who discovered this found that you had CoffeeZilla and, you know, Moist Critical, Penguin Z, and contacted them and say, hey, your information here. They also contacted Trump Mobile and said, hey, you know, you've got a problem with your website. No response. So they contacted these two YouTubers, and the YouTubers went and said, oh my God, my information here is information about 10 to 30,000 other people. This is not real good. So both CoffeeZilla and Moist Critical put up videos on talking about it. They didn't show how this database was hacked. Trump Mobile has patched the vulnerability, but if you or anyone you know ordered a Trump Mobile T1 phone, if you gave me your mobile phone, call your current phone provider and ask them to put out what's called a port out pin or account pin to keep somebody from stealing your telephone number, because the bad guys have your telephone number and they might try to take your phone and port it to some other phone and then steal your identity. Mm. You should also be aware, because this database was exposed, you can expect a wave of spam and scam texts, mm-hmm. because a list of name, addresses, and emails is gold for scammers. So people are going to be impersonating Trump Mobile from the Republican National Party, from the Trump family, and trying to get in for extra information from you. Got to be real careful about messages you get for right now. So this isn't about a phone. It's not about a president. It's not political. It's just a reminder that any company, in this case, big brand, small brand, brand new brand, they can leave a website database open. And when they do, the database is going to be exposed, and the people are going to pay the price or the customers.
So you might even go so far as, if you haven't already done it, do a credit freeze or a fraud alert just in case.
Yeah. Just in case.
Yeah, you signed up for the phone and now your data may be out there.
And again, all of this information will be in the show notes that will be on our blog. Before we wrap up, Patrick, one partly personal thing.
Sure.
Can you share with the class, I love Joseph even more, hearing what he was doing last night when he found out about an Amber Alert.
So we got an Amber Alert. Joseph has a phone, and we monitor that phone very carefully. But obviously, when there's an Amber Alert comes out, he obviously gets it and is concerned. We have to explain what it was. And what the Amber Alert last night was, there was a three-month-old baby that was missing. And they didn't know who took the baby, but they knew the car that the baby was in. They had the make and model of the car and the license plate. So Joseph and Christine last night went out. They were driving out to LAX, obviously, to watch airplanes. Joseph was sitting in the front seat of the car with the phone open, with the alert open, looking at every car on the road, trying to find the missing kid. Fortunately, the missing kid was found. Joseph wasn't involved in the catching, but he was basically trying to catch and find that kid.
Yeah, he was doing his part.
I love everything about that.
I was like, I wanted to hug him so much.
Well, did he get the rest of the story, though, before he went to bed? He found that the baby was found?
He was at LAX, and I texted him saying they found the kid.
So, I was really concerned. I thought, oh, no, please find that baby, and find that baby for Joseph's sake.
Yes.
Because he was scanning every license plate on every black car that was on the interstate.
Mommy, you're going too fast. I can't see this license plate.
I can't. That may have been the important one. Mom, slow down. Oh, golly. Well, thank you, Patrick. And again, your show notes will be posted. And have a terrific holiday weekend. You got Monday off, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very
much. Thanks. Bye-bye.
We'll take a break. More coming up. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Cher had a birthday this week.
She sure did. Cher turned 80. 80 this week.
Kid.
Yeah. She looks good because she was on the red carpet just a couple of weeks ago. Dang.
She looks terrific. She still sounds terrific. The only thing that bothered me was, what was the show that Cher was to give an award on? We were watching. Was that the Academy Awards, or what was that? And she came out and she seemed a little confused. She didn't know she was supposed to read the script. What was that?
I think that was the Oscars, yeah.
Yeah.
But she was given a pass on that because something had happened just before she stepped out. And,
yes.
And things changed on her.
Yeah.
Been there, done that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
People are looking like, you've done something terrible. No, I didn't have any control over this. Things happened backstage or behind the scenes or whatever. But she's had work. But I'm okay with the work that she's had done.
Yeah, oddly enough, the work she's had done was well done.
Well, another birthday today is Priscilla Presley's birthday.
Yeah.
And Priscilla Presley is 81 years old.
Yep.
Bless her heart, she should sue the doctor.
And I've mentioned this before. I have never understood that. Priscilla Presley had some of the worst face work done, and she was married to Elvis, who had facial work done that was some of the best you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And you kind of think she would have had access to whoever that guy was.
Yeah, because that was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I remember the first time I found out that he'd had work, and I'm like, what?
And if you look at it, you can kind of see, but the way it was done, you didn't see puffy cheeks. You didn't see, he had his nose.
You didn't
was
see
worked
the,
on a little bit.
The forehead was not zamboned,
right,
so that you couldn't wrinkle your brow because it was frozen.
Yep.
I think even Priscilla has addressed the fact that things kind of went off the rails.
Oh, she did.
For her.
In fact, wasn't it shortly after she did Dancing with the Stars, somewhere around that period of her life, and she came out and she said, this was awful work.
Yeah. Here's another birthday today, Patti LaBelle. She is 82 years old today.
So Patty's my age.
And Patty LaBelle looks amazing. If she's had work done, she had the best doctor because mm-hmm. I was stunned when I saw her birth date and realized that she was 82 years old because, and she moves great too. She's like Cher. They both seem to be moving, you know, more like they're 60-ish than 80-ish.
Well, 80 is the new 60.
I'm beginning to think that. Tommy Chong, for example, is 88 years old today.
Well, there's a whole different reason for the way that Tommy Chong
He's
moves.
He's been preserved.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, again, considering his lifestyle, he looks pretty darn good for Tommy Chong at 88.
Now you've got Basketball Jones running through the backs of my head.
So that's
Basketball
Jones! Now it's in my
head. I got a Basketball Jones, baby.
Dogs just went, what was that? Yeah, a couple birthdays today. Roseanne Cash birthdaying today. She was born in 55, a very good year. Mm-hmm. So she's 71 years old today. John C. Reilly is 61 years old today. Mark Ballas, speaking of Dancing with the Stars, he's just a kid. He was born in 86. Come on. But it's a big birthday for him, too.
And it's time for the news, too. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that. I don't know a whole lot about her.
Mm-hmm.
That is Bebe Stockwell.
What a great name, too.
And the song is called When You Know, You Know. It's from a new album she has coming out.
She's out of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to be hearing a lot of Bebe.
Yeah. This is one of the songs from a new album she has coming out. And I was checking her website, which is, oddly enough, bebestockwellmusic.com. And she is going to be in Chicago at Shuba's in October.
No. Actually.
Really? Did they change it?
She is going to be. Oh, wow. Look at this. Since we last checked, she is going to be at Shuba's on October 8th. But September 12th. She's going to be at Dawes Park in Evanston.
Really?
That's on September 12th, and a month later she comes back to play Shuba's in Chicago.
Okay.
So, you actually reached out to her too, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, to see if there's any chance when she's going to be in Chicago that she'd like to come and hang out with us for a little bit.
Yeah. Is the new album called Driving Backwards?
No, I think the new album is... Oh, let me see.
Oh, that's right. Driving Backwards was 2025.
Yeah.
She falls under the heading of alternative indie folk. She was interviewed by a music magazine, and she said... It started with a bad hangover and a week of listening to Bob Dylan. She introduces herself as a diaristic songwriter. Diaristic. Well, I guess the root word would be diary. So she's writing about what she knows. A songwriter of rare clarity, crafting vivid vignettes of love, loss, and growing up.
Right now she is in... Missoula, Montana.
Mosula.
And so, then in June, she's going to be in Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
Over she's in the UK, then she comes back to Kingston.
She's adorable, too. She's the whole package. Her voice does not... I shouldn't say this, but the reality...
She has a distinctive voice and delivery.
And it doesn't fit the way she looks.
Yeah.
If I looked at this picture of this cute blonde, I don't know, I didn't expect there's something different about her voice. It's lower. It's just different. She doesn't sound like every other female singer out there.
The Evanston date has just recently been added.
Mm-hmm.
So September 12th in Evanston and October 8th at Shuba's.
Hey, get this. In Evanston on the 12th, she's performing at 11:30 in the morning at the Arrington Lagoon at Dawes Park.
Right.
And then 4 hours later, she's playing again at Dawes Park.
Yeah.
Evanstonians.
Actually, they have to correct the website because it says... 3:30 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. So if she's going to be, well, heck, we can just get off the air and drive up there and see her.
If you're an Evanstonian, is that the music festival that they have in Evanston? Is that at Dawes Park? I mean, what's happening
in
Dawes Park?
Isn't that part of the out of space thing?
I don't know.
That space does?
I have no idea, because it's a month later that she's back in Chicago. So that in itself is kind of unusual, because she's traveling all over the country. And she is Bebe, B-E-B-E, Stockwell, out of Boston, singer-songwriter.
I think you're going to be hearing a lot
from
her.
She's kind of bubbling under there.
I was looking at her site. It looks like she is part of the Evanston Folk Festival.
It is the Folk Festival.
Yeah, so on her site you can get the tickets. And so she's got a couple of different times. So the show starts 12 p.m. For Saturday and Sunday.
But she's performing at 11:30 a.m.
Yeah, I don't. That might be wrong, because according to Ticketweb, the show starts at, like, the 11th. Everything starts at 11:30, but it like she's playing at noon.
Well, speaking of concerts, you were supposed to go to a show last weekend at the Salt Shed, but you didn't make it.
Yes, unfortunately, I didn't make it. My wife has had a little back issues, and so she was not up for standing for that long, and it was an outdoor an event. But I will say I was able to resell my tickets back to the dreaded Ticketmaster.
Really?
And I only lost $12.
What?
So I was okay.
That's a feat when you're dealing with Ticketmaster.
I've never tried that.
Yeah, I was amazed. They're like, would you like to sell these? We can resell them. And they're like, I'm sure. And then as soon as I clicked, it's like, hey, we found someone who wants to buy them. You'll only lose
$12.
Wow. I was like, all right, sure.
Well, that's good to know, because I know there were a couple instances in the past few years, again, because of my back. I said, I can't go. I can't stand.
We had great tickets. We were supposed to go see the Rolling Stones at Soldier Field. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the Stones, and I've always wanted Johnny to see the Stones. And That
wasn't me that time. That was you.
No, this was actually there. I think there were two times.
There were, yeah.
Yeah,
and we were
on Soldier Field, and what was the other? Or was that your dad? Was
no, no. The other one was at the Cell. It was the Cell at that time.
Yeah,
and it was to see somebody big, because they were very big tickets, and we couldn't sell them, so we ended up giving them away. Was that the Stones at the Cell?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
There were two major concerts that we had to pass on.
Yeah. But it never, you know, I thought, well, I'm not going to go out on the street. If I can't go to the concert, I can't go out on the street and sell my tickets. But I never even thought that you could sell them back to the original seller. Lesson learned, right?
By the way, I should remind you that next week we have a full show.
We do.
And
the last Saturday in May.
And Jeff will again be our producer du jour.
Mm-hmm.
But we may be integrating a new producer into the mix next week. So we will let you know about
that. Teach him all my bad habits.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you... And, go ahead.
Also next week, a couple things we have going on. It will be your final recipe.
Mm-hmm.
For the Celiac Awareness Month. And a guy who you've heard, but you may not know him.
Oh, but you'll know the voice, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Bill Cochran is going to be joining us in studio. Bill, you've heard Bill's voice all over the place. Mm-hmm. He's a very well-known Chicago voiceover performer. But he has a group that is so cool.
Are you familiar, Jeff?
Jeff, have you ever heard
of him? I had him in the studio over at the Old Tower and here a couple times perform for their shows when I used to do the afternoons.
The group is Great Moments in Vinyl, and what they do, they recreate an entire album. It is so cool. I was just watching some of their videos. Some of my favorite stuff is where they've done some of the ELO
stuff.
Oh,
I love the ELO.
And they have the group, and they have strings with them, and they're recreating the whole... It's wonderful stuff.
Yeah. They've got three shows coming up this summer
that
he's going to tell us about. And the three different sounds. I think they're doing Phil Collins and Genesis one night.
I think they are, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's going to be in studio, and we'll be sharing some of that information. Also, Tom Appel will join us, the publisher of Consumer Guide, and boy, have we got things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Car stuff.
Oh my gosh, yeah, because we didn't even have time to touch on it tonight, the big decision that was made this past week.
Yes.
About speeders, be aware that if the governor signs off on this House Bill 4948, if you get two speeding tickets within a year, you can be a part of a program that will put
it's
a limiter.
The Illinois Intelligent Speed Assistance Program.
They put a limiter on your car so that you can no longer speed. And
we got to talk about that next week, because I'm kind of back and forth on that. On one hand, I don't like yet more Big Brother stuff. On the other hand, if you've been ticketed twice for speeding, maybe you kind of might want to be monitored.
Did you know that last year, one third of highway fatalities in Illinois were caused by speeding? One third. And we had an experience tonight as we were driving into work. Our car told us we were coming into a speed zone. And it's a crazy speed zone. If you travel on Peterson on the north side of Chicago,
it's somewhere around
Western.
Is it around, it's closer to California.
Yes.
And it's only for about a block and a half, but all of a sudden you go down to like 20. And if you do 20, you will be hit in that zone.
Yeah.
Which is wild because the speed camera there is only a 30-mile-an-hour speed cam.
That's
it's kind of
a
school zone cam. So
yes.
You only have to go to 30. 35 is the limit, and people are doing 20 there.
Yeah. 20. Literally, they will run over you. And our car was going, it's 20. It's 20. Slow down. It's 20. And we were going 24 to try to keep up without being run over. Like I'm going to get run over by the Zamboni.
Yep, here comes the Zamboni. That's Big Plug Bob is getting ready to clean things up.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, we have made a mess. Well, we got all these gluten-free crumbs around the studio that he has to get rid of.
Delicious crumbs.
Yes,
yes, all the
wonderful crumbs.
Yummy, ooey-gooey crumbs all over the place.
Don't worry about it, Bob. We'll look them off the floor. But that is the signal that if you would like to be our last caller and win some goodies from this here radio place.
Mm-hmm.
Your dialing finger should be dialing 312-981-7200. Does anybody dial anymore?
Oh, please.
312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200. And as long as you haven't won anything from this here radio place in 60 days or the last 2 months, whichever comes first, you could win some goodies.
So if you're not dialing, what are we doing?
You're punching in codes.
Inputting the numbers. If you're inputting the numbers, it's 312-981-7200, right?
Yeah, that's it.
I kind of like dialing, because then, you know.
Dialing is friendlier.
Yeah.
Inputting is so
when I'm on my
computer-y.
When I'm on my princess phone, I'm dialing. I'm not inputting numbers, right?
Oh, whoops, here he comes again. Okay, I think we better take a break and get out of the way. Okay, we'll be back after this.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready. Yeah.
Yep.
Losing time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, you really kind of do.
Nope, you can't stay here, and you can't hear the whole song, because if you did, we wouldn't be coming back here on the radio.
But if you would like to hear the whole song, go to YouTube and look up the closing song by Red Peters, and you will hear why we ain't going to play the song,
mm-hmm.
at least not tonight.
Not tonight, no. But
maybe 60 years from now? Who knows?
Oh, our last caller tonight.
As a matter of fact, I get to pick the last caller mm-hmm. because since this was the 60th anniversary of my first show, I'm going to go with caller number one. And caller number one is George. Hey, George, where are you calling from?
Hi, kids. I'm calling from the island of Capri in Italy.
Oh, buongiorno!
Hey, George!
It's George!
We saw your post.
Yes!
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Why are you there? What are you doing?
So, we're on a two-week trip. So, we left O'Hare last Monday.
Yeah.
And we come back a week from tomorrow.
Are you in heaven?
We're doing the whole boot. So it's just it's been a great trip so far. So
wow,
at the Vatican, and you know, Sistine Chapel and St. Peter's Basilica and all that good stuff.
Wow,
we've been on Capri for 2 days, and
I have to ask you two things. One, how are you listening to us? And two, how are you calling us?
I'm on my phone because I activated my phone, but I'm listening to you online.
Wow. Yeah. That is so cool.
We winter in Arizona, so that's how I listen to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the time, and I've been listening to WGN since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So listening to you guys forever, you know. And I listen to you guys. I fade in and out of consciousness. You know?
So do we.
Yes. Well, tell us, what's your weather like there in Capri?
It's a little warm, like a lot of places, but mm-hmm. it's been in the high 70s, right around 80. So it's been fairly warm.
Warmer
than they're used to.
Are you coming up on 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday?
Oh no! Right now we're 7 hours ahead of you.
Okay.
So we're coming up on 9 o'clock.
Yeah. That's what I said. Okay.
Yeah, 9 o'clock. Yeah. Yes. You're right, Johnny.
So what are your plans for the rest of your Sunday?
So we're about to get on a boat to go back to the mainland, and we're going to Naples today.
Oh, golly.
So we're going to Assisi, a very famous basilica
Napoli.
There.
Ego, Napoli.
The days are filled.
Are you with a tour group, George?
Yeah, we're with a tour group, 32 of us.
Oh, wow.
It's basically a bus deal.
Okay, because we hear somebody in the background.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of people because there's a whole bunch of people here about to get on a bus.
Well, tease us with the best food that you've had while you've been there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Oh, the best food. Well, mm-hmm. I had some very good plant noodle pasta yesterday with meatballs, which was terrific.
Mm.
But, you know, every pasta you have here is terrific. It's much better than back home. You know, and they know how to make it. You know, it's all al dente and it's all good.
Oh goodness, that's wonderful. Yeah. So you've got almost a full week ahead of you as you continue on.
Yeah, we've got a little over a week to go.
Oh,
are you taking tons of pictures? And if you are, you have to post some of them online.
Yeah.
My wife does all the posting. My wife Kathy does all the posting. she's the chief information officer.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Well, I was joking when I read your text when we did our shout outs. I don't know if you heard it. I said I was wearing
I was wearing a
t-shirt with the island of Capri on it the other day. And a doctor said to me, "So you've been there?" And I said, "No, I'm just putting it out in the universe, so eventually I'll go there." That is pretty cool.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
So what is your must-see thing over the next week, and what is your wife's must-see thing over the next week?
We already saw the must stuff in the Vatican for me.
Sure.
But we move every day to every other day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but we're going to Florence and Venice, and you know, I want to get on that gondola in Venice.
Oh, of course. Oh, this is so exciting. Yeah. What a romantic trip too, George. Good for you.
We're blessed.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. So this is not marking an anniversary or anything. This is just your big vacation hoorah.
This is our vacation for the year.
Okay,
so
George.
We try to go one place every year.
Well, thank you for making us a part of your vacation. This is so cool. So right now are you on the island of Capri as we speak?
On the island of Capri, about to get on a boat to get off the island of Capri.
Well,
okay.
Enjoy safe travels and just grab for all the gusto over the next week and a half, George. Thank you so much for checking in.
And hold on for a quick second, and we will get some information from you off the air, and you will get some goodies from the WGN Radio prize list, one of the WGN Radio t-shirts.
Mm-hmm. I cannot believe that.
That is so cool. But I asked how he was calling because I was wondering, obviously he's using his phone, but is
out of the country?
Yeah, I wonder if you have to have a separate international calling, or depending on how you, what
who your carrier is.
It is.
You know, it may have cost him $100 to make this phone call. Who knows? Maybe he doesn't know until he gets his bill. Surprise!
I remember that used to be a thing when we would talk with Orion about the times that he would go over to China or some other place in the world. And at that time, of course, this would have been back in the early 2000s, probably.
Mm-hmm.
He said he had to get a separate plan for international calling.
Right.
Now, if you've got whoever your carrier is.
I'm sure you remember when we were in London.
Oh, yeah.
This was in 1990.
Yep.
And this was in the hospital.
Yep.
They rolled a payphone to the bed.
It literally looked like a little payphone on wheels that they would roll, and we would have to put in
coins
every like 5 minutes.
Lots and lots of coins to call back to WGN Radio.
Because we were talking to Bob Collins.
Yes, yes. And it was, I think about, that was just yesterday. And they were giving us a payphone.
Yeah.
Nowadays, we just pull our phone out of our pocket and make that call.
I'm going to do an audible. Jeff, it's, 59.25?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, it's 58.42, but...
Come here.
Jeff, what do you got planned for Monday, the holiday?
I'm going to tend to my garden. I have a day off, so I'm going to settle in and make it look nice.
Before we get out of here, off the air, Johnny has to show you some pictures of the wonderful garden she is
calling. Well, it is
gorgeous.
You do potatoes. I do flowers.
All right. I do some flowers, but mostly potatoes.
And I just stand back and applaud.
Yeah. God bless you. You say, go ahead, knock yourself out. I'll be buying another guitar.
Yeah.
With what I've spent on flowers, you may be able to buy another guitar. Okay. Fair is fair.
It's been a fun night. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thanks to Big Plug Bob and Ron and
Dimitri.
Jeff and Dimitri and all the ships at sea. And thank you for hanging out with us. And we'll talk to you next week.